put it on silent. And the back door needs to remain clear. The hearing of the Cambridge License Commission, Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. It's 3 o'clock p.m. We're in the Michael J. Lombardi Building, 831 Mass Ave Basement Conference Room. Before you are the commissioners, Chair Nicole Moratti Ferrer, Gerard Mahoney, and Branville Bard.
I would like to make a motion to move into executive session to discuss the strategy concerning an open meeting law complaint filed by Kimberly Courtney and Xavier Dietrich regarding the Cambridge License Commission's February 1st Statement of Reasons issued to Coffee Shop LLC DBA Upper West License Number 11587 and 13296. So based on that motion, let's do a roll call vote. Commissioner Bard?
Aye.
Commissioner Mahoney?
Yes.
Myself and Coleman at the compare. Yes, so we'll move to executive session. We'll be back after executive session. It shouldn't be that long. Thank you. So we are back on the regular agenda. I just wanted to let everyone know the attorneys that are here representing any applicants or licensee, please fill out a notice of appearance form so that we know where to send the statement of reasons. Anyone that wants a copy of a decision that we issued today or any witness, if you could please fill it out, that would be helpful as well so we get the spelling of your names right for the minutes. Thank you very much. We are now on the regular back on regular meeting. The executive session has ended. Commissioner Bart has to excuse himself for another matter, so it'll just be Commissioner Mahoney and I for the remainder of the meeting. Thank you.
And if you could either be in the room or out of the room, but not in the doorway. Thank you. First matter, application, Antonio Dorville for a new Cambridge Hackney driver's license.
Antonio Dorville, check and call.
Haylou Ferreja for a new Cambridge Hackney driver's license.
Haylou, second call.
Application, Dolly Lupe Costello, doing business as Spiritual New Age Boutique, 163 Hampshire Street, for a new fortune teller's license.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Please state and spell your last name for the record.
Yes, Attorney Alfred Paul Farese Jr., F-A-R-E-S-E, 366 Broadway, Everett, Mass.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your first name.
Alfred.
Thank you.
Dolly Costello, D-O-L-L-Y, Costello, C-O-S-T-E-L-L-O, 163 Hampshire Street, Cambridge.
Thank you.
Yes, this is an application for a fortune teller's license pursuant to the statute. There is no ordinance regarding fortune teller's license in the city of Cambridge, so we have to abide by the state. my client has provided the proper ordinances with regard to the building and the location. We've gone through all that process, and you should have that before you. Pursuant to the law regarding fortune teller's license, it is a non-discretionary license. It is not a license that contains the word may, but the word shall. There are several cases regarding this type of a license, which says that the three criteria are: is it properly zoned, is it inspected by building inspectors, and whether my client is of good character. Those are the only three criteria that are necessary. We have provided all that documentation, plus a query, and ask that they should be given a license.
Thank you. Ms. Costello, do you plan to be the only person telling fortunes at that location?
Yes.
I think we've provided a price list for you already. And
that was my next question. You mentioned three things: palm readings, psychic readings, and tarot card readings. Is that correct? And those are the only three services?
Yes.
Have you ever been convicted of any crime of falsehood?
No.
Have you ever been convicted of fraud?
No.
She has had a license in the city, some of them, but because of mold conditions inside the business, she has to move, and that's the reason why she's applied here. But she's had licenses in the city of Somerville.
With no issues?
No issues for 7 years.
Okay. Do you have any questions? Anyone in favor of this petition? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay, I would vote to grant. Granted. Thank you. You'll receive a letter with more information on what to do to finish the property.
Awesome. You should have my appearance there. Do you need another one? I'll be happy to find it.
I have it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you as well. I'm sorry, I can't really tell who's talking, but if you're going to be talking, if you could take it outside, that would be helpful because it's kind of distracting up here. We're also recording, so it can sort of jumble the recording once we try and hear it in the future, so thank you.
Disciplinary matter, McCabe's Porter, LLC, doing business as McCabe's Bar and Grill, 2046 Mass Ave, common victualler, all alcohol, license number 11491498, alleged violations of Mass General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64, Board's rules, employee making improper bodily contact with a patron, which may have led to an assault and battery by patron on employee on February 3rd, 2019, failure to call police on February 3rd, 2019, and transfer of privilege of license and or changes to the beneficial interest holders of the license and or changes to the members of the LLC without approval from the board and the ABCC. Anyone who's going to testify, please stand and raise your right hand. I swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you.
What's the name? Aristotle Manon here.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. Could we please start this way and go around with your names and last name for the record?
Ronald McNeil, McNeill.
Thank you.
Thomas Covert, COV as in Victor, ERT.
Thank you.
John Drewitz, DREWICZ.
Are you a sergeant or detective?
No, I'm just a regular patrolman.
Thank you.
Andrea Boyer, BOYER. Cambridge License Commission.
Thank you.
Detective Michael Schwartz, SCHWARTZ.
Thank you. Ms. Courtney, are you not representing McCabe's today?
I do represent them, but I'm not setting the hearing on their behalf.
Okay, thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. A complainant on Mr. Aristotle Manning contacted our office via telephone on February 4th, 2019 to place a complaint against McCabe's establishment. Mr. Manning stated the owner, Mr. Ron McNeil, shoved his head into the bar after telling him Mr. McMahon that he could no longer allow back into the establishment. Mr. McMahon stated to me that he was trying to explain to Ron McNeil while he was paying his tab that he had already given his credit card to Ron McNeil's colleague, later identified as Mr. Dave Wells. Mr. Manning additionally noted that while Ron McNeil was telling him that he could not come back into the establishment, Ron McNeil grabbed the back of his neck to shove his head onto the bar. Mr. Manning reported to me that he wondered if the situation would have escalated had Ron McNeil not been drinking so heavily. There were photos submitted of Ron McNeil drinking given to me by Mr. McMahon, which I'll get to you, and he also submitted a video complaint.
Mr. Covert and Mr. McNeil, have you seen these? I know they were sent with the hearing mm-hmm. notice, but I'm not sure. They were sent to your attorney, so I'm not sure if you saw them.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Copy of each one of those.
I think I have a copy here, just one more for our commissioner. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, sir, you either have to come in the room or outside. You cannot block the doorway. Thank you.
Thank you. And Chief Boyer, you also mentioned a video. I know that you submitted the video to myself. Did you submit the video to any other members of the board?
Yes, they were sent to the other board members.
I know we have it here, but did you have an opportunity to serve the video?
I did not.
Okay, so let's, Ms. Young, do you mind? Thank you. Oh, I can do this. I just meant pulling up that thing. Thank you.
So you can have that. Chief, can I have you sweep that? Just because it's going to go right in your eye.
Okay, maybe you do one other again. So. Chief Blair, where did you get this video?
The complainant, Mr. Solomon, and sent it to me.
And have you identified the gentleman who just...
It's Mr. McNeil.
So the champagne. Okay. And this video, did you also receive this from the complainant?
I did.
And this video?
Yes.
For the complainant as well?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So when you were talking about the videos, these are the ones you're referring to?
Yes.
Still pictures that you gave us are still pictures from these videos?
Yes.
Okay. You may continue.
Mr. Mannon also placed a complaint with the Cambridge Police Department.
You don't want to close that yet.
Okay.
Thank you.
The video provided by the establishment during a follow-up investigation on February 6th with Detective Michael Schwartz showed a conversation transpiring between the complainant and Mr. McNeil. The complainant signs his tab, briskly pushes the tab bill towards Ron McNeil off the bar, onto the floor, and walks away. Ron McNeil motions with a hand signal for Mr. McMahon to come back to the bar. Ron McNeil grabbed the complainant by the shirt, and the scuffle ensued.
And then we received video on this as well?
Yes, from Detective Schwartz.
Now you can take them. Thank you. Anything else, Chief Boyer?
No, the police officer who took Mr. Manning's complaint is here. Okay.
Is that you, Officer Truitt?
It is.
Can you tell us what you were informed about?
Basically, I was working the front desk, and Mr. McMahon came to the front desk and said that he had a problem at the Chime Square Club, Chime Square. And,
I'm sorry.
And he stated that he had an altercation with the bartender. He said he had already spoken to Ms. Boyer, and that he came in to make a report for assault. He said basically he went there around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I guess, and was watching the Super Bowl and some other sporting events. And he stated that, he had something to eat, he had a couple of drinks, and he said when the game was over, he bought a round of drinks for a couple of people near him. He said he put down his credit card, and he said he thought somebody took it, maybe somebody named Dave, but he wasn't sure, and then they came with the bill again. And that's when he had an argument with the gentleman. He gave me this gentleman's name, Ron McNeil. He gave me a description of a white male, 5'10", medium build, early 40s, blonde hair, blue/green eyes. And he said this gentleman said, I don't lose credit cards. And they had an altercation, verbal. And then he stated that Mr. McNeil grabbed him by his neck and tried to push his head into the, this is what he stated, he tried to push his head into the bar and he pulled away. His head did not make contact with the bar. He said it ensued into a scuffle, and he said another patron from the bar tried to help Mr. McNeil, but one of Mr. Manon's friends boxed him out. And McNeil stated, I do not like you. You are not welcome here. Don't ever come back. I said it was witnessed by a couple of his friends. I have the names there if you need them. And he says that eventually they found the card. He believes he was charged a $217 tab twice, but he did show me a picture of, similar to the video, I don't remember what section it was, of the gentleman he identified as Mr. McNeil drinking from a champagne bottle. And he said he went on, he gave a negative review and all this other stuff. And I asked him if he's injured. He said he wasn't, he's a little sore, and he refused medical attention. But like I said, he said he thinks the tab got paid twice, and he said he was going to follow up with the licensing board, basically.
Okay. Thank you. Detective, do you have anything to add?
So I spoke with Mr. McNeil, Mr. Wells, the cook, everyone except for the female working on the bar that day. I spoke with Mr. Manning's two buddies that he was with. They all have a various accounts of that. Obviously, only Mr. McNeil and Mr. Manning were really involved in that, as you can see. They all have little pieces to that puzzle. It became apparent through my investigation that there had been no hate crime or race card played, or at least it didn't appear that way, and that the assault, if anything, was mutual, or even if Mr. Manning still wanted to, I gave him the advisements on how he could follow up at court, but as a investigating unit, we were not going to bring any charges forward at court.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Colbert or Mr. McNeil?
I guess I'll just say what I said to Investigator Boyer and Schwartz. The summary of the situation is that R.A. thought we had lost his card. I've known him for 3 years. He's come in my bar. I don't take cards from people I know. I wasn't aware that the other bartender had taken his card. It was very busy at the end of the Super Bowl night. We were trying to close everybody out, and R.A. became more and more escalated, and I explained to him that we know each other. If we have your card, which you think you do, it'll be here tomorrow. I'm sorry if we can't find it now. And he got heated. I overreacted when he threw that check at me, and I shouldn't have done that.
And so what we observed on that video, was it you drinking champagne?
I did drink champagne. I would say I heard someone say I was drinking heavily, I wouldn't agree to that, but I know drinking at all was the wrong thing to do.
And were you still on duty at the time you were drinking?
I was.
And when you mention it, into my bar, what do you mean my bar?
Into? What are you referring to?
You said that that he has come into my bar.
The bar that I've been working at for 30 years.
Ms. Boyer, do you have anything to add in terms of the allegations for transfer of privilege of license center, changes to beneficial interest holders, or changes to the members of the LLC without approval?
Well, when Mr. Manon gave me the information over the phone, he referred to Rob McNeil and David Wells as the owners and also bartenders. The comment reminded me of an article that was written in December stating that McCabe's would now be called Shine Square Pub, and the new owners, Ron McNeil, Dave Wells, and Mike Allman, would be taking over. There was the article. I believe that you have a copy of the article on this file. It made me check the viewpoint system, which we have, that has notations or comments for applicants, and I found the following comment was by Brian Manning, made on December 20th, 2018, and it was notated as Brian Manning said, "Hi, I just spoke to Elizabeth Lynn about changing our DBA on our licenses. She mentioned that we could file that application through viewpoint, but I'm not seeing where I could do that. We need to change both our food establishment, alcohol, Vic, entertainment licenses. Thanks." And there was a memo by Elizabeth Lynn noting that the owner, Tom Covert, stated that there'd be a DBA change only and no new ownership at this time. During the follow-up investigation on the 6th, I asked Ron McNeil who the owners are, and he stated Tom Covert. When asked if there were any other owners that I should contact, reiterated, no, just Tom. The other two are out. No further. He further clarified, we hope to be owners as well someday. We had a handshake deal, but that may not happen. Lastly, he added, we have told people we're owners because we are always on site, but that may be a mistake.
Mr. McNeil, do you deny saying that to Ms. Boyer?
I don't.
Mr. Covert, are you the only owner?
No. Currently, there are three owners on the LLC as it started when we first opened. 5 years ago, myself, Chris Whitney, and Brian Manning. We are in talks currently that I'm going to take over and buy them out. That's been slowed down. Just trying to get all the jumping through all the hurdles and making sure we're doing it accurately. I had filed the DBA name change to Shine Square Pub with the city clerk on January 2nd. I think that's where the confusion all started, and I apologize for that. I realize I should have come here first, but I thought in my reviewing of the website and how to do it, it seemed like that was all that was needed at that point, since there was no change in the LLC. And the,
so what you're saying is that at this time, the three disclosed owners are still the disclosed owners,
yes,
and are still the people that are receiving the profits from the sale of the alcohol?
Yes.
And do you expect a change in that within the next 2 weeks?
2 weeks, no. Within the next month or two, hopefully.
So then my next question to you would be, so should we proceed with hearing your application for the change of DBA next meeting, which is March
27th?
That would be up to you.
Well, we had moved it because your attorney had mentioned that there might be a possibility that you guys were going to amend and add some new owners.
Right.
So if you're telling me no, then we informed your attorney that you should not be operating under the new DBA until approved.
Agreed.
You are. So let's correct that.
Okay.
And if you're telling me that there's going to be no changes,
I can. I hope to have the changes done back in January. It's just slogged along, attorneys passing paperwork back and forth. So I'm trying to get it done as quickly as possible. But I don't know. I doubt 2 weeks we'll have it done. So.
Okay. Mr. McNeil, when you called over the patron and grabbed him, did you do so because you were feeling threatened, physically threatened?
He threw that check across the bar at me, and I reacted. I would say maybe. I mean, I don't know what his next move was, and he was.
Was he talking. Leaving?
Sorry?
Was he leaving?
Well, the fact that he was paying his bill to me means that he was planning on leaving, but.
Were you feeling physically threatened?
Yes.
Do you think that other patrons were being threatened?
I don't think so.
I believe you stated that this individual had patronized your establishment, or the establishment before?
Yes, sir.
Has he continued to do so?
No, sir.
Had you ever had any type of altercation or problem with this individual
Absolutely
before?
Absolutely none.
How long would you say he was at the establishment on the date in question, February 3rd?
I believe he mentioned he came in around 4 and was there till around 11 p.m.
So this is time stamped 10:55 p.m.
Yeah.
And you said you were trying to get things closed up. The game was over by that point, right?
Right, the Super Bowl had just ended and we had a full house and we tried, and everybody wants to leave at once, so we were trying to be efficient. And
so it was more a sense of the patrons wanted to get out as opposed to you wanting to get the patrons out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Mr. McNeil, if you were feeling threatened, why didn't you call the police?
Because when he walked out the door, I didn't feel threatened anymore.
But you felt threatened enough to call him back to come to the bar and then grab him?
Yes.
But not enough to call the police.
No, ma'am.
Do you have any other questions?
No.
Do you have anything else to add?
Just that staff has been reminded that drinking, even in a celebratory fashion, after a Super Bowl win like that is unacceptable. It was spraying champagne and then pouring it. I question the comment that they were drinking heavily. That video showed two instances where one where champagne was being dropped from 4 feet above Mr. McNeil into his mouth, and maybe some got in, I don't know, and that he took two sips after shaking it on people. That's all. But if he's not here to say, but he's claiming that, or his statement that he drank heavily is being entered in, I question that. I don't think that's accurate.
Mr. McNeil, in the, Mr. Colbert, were you there that day?
Yes, I was.
Were you there when all this was happening?
I left before then. I left right after the game. Mr. McNeil called me the next day to tell me what had happened. He said I missed it by about 2 minutes.
Go ahead.
Sorry, the other bartender, the one with the Bledsoe jersey, is he still employed?
Yes.
And his name?
David Wells. He was mentioned by both by the officers. And
and Mr. Colbert, are you still, aside from the change of DBA, I just remember you're also requesting for a change of manager, and you have Mr. McNeil as the proposed manager of record. Are you still going forward with that request?
We are evaluating that. We are going to change the manager because the current manager is Brian Manning, and when the LLC changes and he's no longer there, he can't be the manager, as he's not won't be part of the bar anymore. So whether it's Mr. McNeil, myself, or someone else, we're looking into.
Okay. Mr. McNeil, aside from the bottle of champagne that you had and that Mr. Wells had, I don't know if you saw in the video, there was a bottle of champagne that was put on the bar and then was grabbed by a patron, and the patron also took a swig out of it. Was that your bottle of champagne?
I don't recall that. I kind of saw it on the video, but I don't know if he put it down. Or
did you have any patrons sitting at the bar that ordered bottles of champagne?
I don't recall that either, but I mean, I see a bottle of champagne on the bar. And giving that bottle of champagne to that gentleman.
Anything else to add, anyone?
No.
Okay. Are you ready to vote? So based on what we've heard and the videos, this is how I would propose voting. I would say right off the bat that I do not believe Mr. McNeil was feeling threatened. I think his original statement that he overreacted was more accurate. Even if that's what he said, I don't find that credible. So with that said, I would find a violation for employee making improper bodily contact with a patron. I would find a violation for employee consuming alcohol and engaged in prohibited practices. I would find no violation for the transfer of privilege of the license and or changes to the beneficial interest holders of the LLC. And with regard to the failure to call police, I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
I too am concerned by the fact that there was no call made to the police, both with respect to, you stated that the patron, my understanding was that you felt that the patron was making an accusation that somebody had possibly taken his credit card, and that that was not the case. And then also by the assault and battery that took place, as I think the detective characterized it as somewhat mutual, that to have an establishment as crowded as it was, based on both the photos and the video, the atmosphere that I'm sure was in place after a Super Bowl victory in this area, I feel that that was a very serious lapse in judgment to not contact the police with what had transpired or what was transpiring at the time.
Okay. So the proposal would be violation for improper bodily contact, failure to call police, and consuming alcohol, and then a no violation on the transfer of privilege.
I would agree with that.
Okay. With regard to the three violations,
Is there any history?
In the last 4 years, there is no history. It was a warning letter in terms of entertainment, unlicensed entertainment, but that was it.
I'm unaware of that warning letter.
We are voting, but that was in April of 2017. It was just after a task force inspection. There was some unlicensed stuff, and the letter was sent, and that was corrected.
Okay, I didn't know about that. I'm sorry, that's all.
Probably Brian Manning did.
Yep.
The records linked
okay.
to his name.
That's fine. Thank you.
But with that said, I think the violation of an employee making improper bodily contact is a very serious one. I think, as you very well stated, the failure to call police is a serious one. And I think consuming alcohol while on duty, and especially on a day like this, is also a very serious one. So I would consider a suspension of the license. And I don't know, I would say 3 days, 1 day per violation.
I'd concur with that.
Okay. So violations on count 1 through 3, 1 day suspension on each for a total of 3 days, and no violation on count 4. Mr. Colbert, I am going to give you until Friday of this week to send us an email and inform us whether or not you are going to continue with Mr. McNeil as the proposed manager of record.
Okay.
You will be receiving a letter. Or strike that, I guess your attorney will be receiving a letter if that's what you choose, or we can send it to you, tell me, for the hearing for March 27th.
Okay.
So when you send us the email on Friday
mm-hmm.
of this week, tell us, one, whether you're going to proceed with Ron McNeil as the proposed manager of record, And if not, who is, if you're going to replace them, the okay. application for that person.
Okay.
And then two, whether the hearing notice for March 27th, whether that should be sent to you or to your attorney.
Okay, that can be sent to the attorney, my
okay.
attorney.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Application Verizon Incorporated Special Noise Variance at 10 Weir Street.
Before we start with the application for Verizon, if there are any residents that are going to speak on this, and if you're sitting sort of against the wall, I would suggest starting to make your way this way so that when you come and speak, we have a smoother transition. Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your last name for the record?
Sure. Stanley Yusevich, Verizon Government Affairs. Last name is U-S-O. V-I-C-Z.
Thank you.
John Dement, last name D-E, capital M-E-N-T.
Thank you.
And my name is Johanna Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R, and I am their attorney.
I'm sorry,
S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R.
Thank you. And again, for the record, Chief Boyer.
Yes.
Okay. Tanya Schneider, do you want to start with the variance?
Sure. Just by way of background, Verizon operates at 10 Weir Street, what's called a telecommunications central office. It provides telecommunications services to most of Cambridge and also a portion of Somerville. And I would note that Cambridge Police Department 911 calls are routed through this central office facility. In December 2018, Verizon installed a new generator at the property. After the installation, it discovered that this generator exceeded the applicable limitations under the noise ordinance. We're now in the process of installing sound attenuation equipment to bring the generator into compliance with the ordinance. We're estimating that the sound attenuation installation will be complete by the beginning of July of this year. So to that end, we are seeking a 6-month special variance for two purposes. One is with respect to construction-related noise. This will take place during allowable construction hours, so we're talking about Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. We are also looking for permission to do monthly generator testing for 1 hour, one time per month. And we do understand from some of the feedback that we've received from the neighborhood that they would like some certainty as to when that will happen. We are happy to agree to a specific time. I think one proposal that we had discussed with some folks was the second Wednesday of each month from 11 a.m. to noon, and we're happy to have that as our set time. We would note a couple of wrinkles to this. One is that at the very completion of the construction of the sound attenuation equipment, we will need to do a single generator run to test the installation to make sure that it is working to buffer the sound as required. We would suggest and invite someone such as Ms. Boyer, to be present for that one test, but that would be a one-off. The other thing I did want to point out to the commission, that because of the critical nature of the operations at this facility, while we don't anticipate it happening, we also cannot anticipate happening a power outage that would require us to run the generator, you know, if there's a massive power failure in the area. We would need to have that, you know, to have the generator run to continue to be providing service during that time.
Now, you mentioned 6 months, but based on the application, it was only through July 26, 19.
Is that
was that amended?
I believe that's what it was at the time.
Okay.
Okay. then my other question is, you're talking about sound attenuation installation. Have you already ordered the installation or what you're going to use to attenuate the sound?
So we are in the design phase now. We have final plans that we've just received from the sound engineer, and we will be ordering the equipment to pursue those plans. If we can get it done sooner, we would love to get it done sooner. The longest lead time is the ordering and the receipt of the materials that need to be installed. And so if there's some way to, you know, kind of expedite that, we will.
So it hasn't been ordered?
It has not been ordered yet.
Has the design been finished?
It's 90% done, maybe 95% done. There's just some finishing touches. I have a copy of it with me today. And we will work on the lead time, so yes.
Okay, and the person that has designed it, is that the person that's going to install it?
No, it'll be out to bid for a contractor to install.
Okay, so you also have to do the contract bidding?
Yes.
And how long does that take? How long do you bid for?
Well, it has to be approved, and then the contractor will have to bid maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks scenario. So at least a month. So we have to finish the design, order the material, and I will expedite the ordering of the material to get it in sooner prior to actually the bidding of the equipment, but the actual installation. But there are some steps that we have to go through as far as our procedure. So we are trying to move forward as quickly as possible.
So your bid is only as to who will install?
Correct.
So why can't you start the bidding process now?
Well, I will. I'll have the final drawings by the end of this week. And then we will meet at the facility with the contractors to review the installation. The pricing will come back. The approval for the funds will be awarded. And then we will move forward. But I will be trying to move forward with the purchase of the material sooner if I can. It's a system thing.
I'll tell you why I'm pushing on this. I'm asking you why you're not doing
both at the same time.
Simultaneously, because
right. That's
why I asked you how long the bidding takes, because in government, bidding is a long process.
It takes a long time.
It can be
it does.
So I'm not quite sure with you how long you guys bid out for, if it's 30 days, if you have the bid out for 30 days, 45 days, or however. But if that's the case, and it's literally just for the installation, I'm unaware as to why you can't be moving parallel on both of these matters.
We will try, but I think we have already kind of selected the contractor that's been on site doing the work. So we hope that he will just take on this as another project, and that's the plan. So we're not really going to go out to multiple bidders. We'll probably work with the vendor that's been on site.
Okay, and the person that installs it is not the person that tests the noise for you?
Well, it'll be through the design professional who has hired the Ascentec sound company to do the testing. And Andrea has worked with them, and we want Andrea there as well.
Well, she would have to be there,
obviously,
to
verify
there,
the sound. Mm-hmm. But we would estimate, you know, between 3 to 6 months to complete this job. We would plan on sooner.
And if I'm understanding your presentation correctly, Attorney Schneider, so basically the variance would literally, the bulk of the variance for this time period, for these 4 months, would basically be for that one time per month testing that you have to do under the FCC. That's the bulk of it.
Yes.
And then the one-off, once it is installed, to check whether the attenuation worked, and if it didn't, to then make more corrections, I guess?
Well, I guess I would add just two clarifications, if I may. The mm-hmm. first one is that, you know, to the extent that there will be some construction noise that exceeds the ordinance as we are installing the sound attenuation equipment, we would hope that the variance would cover that. And I think that was stated in our application. It is absolutely the case, though, that we are looking at the bulk of it is 1 hour per month until we have the equipment installed. And then, you know, one final run where we, you know, are hopeful we will find that the installed equipment has been effective. If it's not, we will be back, you know, to seek an additional variance or to extend the variance for an additional amount of time, so that we would be, you know, continuing to do construction to solve if there was an issue.
And Mr. Demet, so you've seen the plans for this proposed attenuation?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any sense of, once you have all the materials and everything, how long it would take to install?
I don't. I would assume 6 weeks.
Is it similar to the type of attenuation you did for the temporary generator?
No, it won't be. It'll be acoustical ductwork added on to the baffles, to the exhaust part of the generator. It's like a prefab assembled piece.
I'm a little puzzled how they placed the generator on site without making sure the engineering of the generator didn't conform with the noise ordinance ahead of time in this day and age. Can you explain that?
So the generator that was installed, the manufacturer gave us some incorrect data. It came in louder than what was stated to us. We designed attenuation to meet what the criteria was presented to us. I found this to be a case in another situation, and we are correcting that with the manufacturer. So we are compensating for their lack of incorrect data to correct the problem. It should have worked. There was no reason why it wouldn't have. We designed it. We paid an engineer to provide, do a sound study and give us the correct baffling.
And how long ago was the new generator installed?
Went into production in December, was it the 7th or the 13th? I'd have to go back and look at my notes.
It was December 7th.
The 7th, mm-hmm.
So you're looking for variance for kind of a wide berth, if you will, for construction phase, and then 1 hour per month for testing. That's once the job is finished. But the testing while the job is ongoing will be much more frequently than that, I would assume.
No, during the duration of the construction period, we are required to test once per month. And so it would be this 1 hour per month during the construction phase, one final test at the end of the installation. And then after that, you know, if everything goes according to plan, the sound will be baffled. And so, it won't be audible above the limits after the construction is complete.
Where is the generator located? Is it outside of the building?
It's in the basement.
It's in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And there's exhaust up the exterior of the building? Is that?
Yeah. Yes.
It's right to the property line. So it's not.
It's the exhaust from
right
the air from the generator
to
across the radiator.
It's in the
parking
lot.
The noise. Yes. The exhaust from the fumes, right, from the spent fuel.
Okay. Chief Boyer, did you have anything else to add?
I think some residents will definitely cover everything.
All right. Attorney Galuccio, I know that you...
Anthony Sherwin.
I'm not comfortable with you around. Thank you, Madam Chair. Honorable members of the Commission, I'm Anthony Galuccio. I'm a partner with Galuccio and Watson. Here as a resident, I'm actually a direct abutter. If I could just provide just pictures of where I sleep sporadically. And these two, the upper window is my bedroom, so I overlook the generator.
Can you give the attorney next to you a copy?
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know if I go out to the site.
I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I moved in a couple years ago, probably just over 2 years, and I wish that the relationship was one of better faith. Having served on the City Council for, about 15 years and been in government for longer than that, I didn't want to be the guy to complain about what was there before me, and I'm still not that guy. I understand that there's a switch house there, and Verizon has been there, and I know some of the employees, and let them use my bathroom when they strike, and I have no issue with what was there, but there's been an incredible amount of change in the building since I moved in, and I won't go into those issues because I know that this hearing, the scope of this is the generator. This first became an issue during the summer when this thing came on, and it was probably 10 o'clock one Saturday night, and it was like being next to Logan Airport. I didn't even realize that there was a generator in place for emergency service in case the switch house went out. I really wasn't that familiar with what they did, other than they come, you know, the Verizon workers come, get their orders in the morning, and they leave. So that's when that first became the issue of the generator. I then learned that later that there had been construction on the building for a long time, from windows to excavation, and it went on and on. And I live right next door. I never got a flyer or a notice, that no explanation of what was going on in the building. After, thanks to Mrs. Boyer, they were instructed to start communicating with us. And so I still wasn't sure at that point whether the work that had been going on all over the building was related to the generator and how the generator played into it. The testing has been an ongoing issue. We did learn that they were under a construction exemption, which may not have been a problem if we as a neighborhood had met with them and come up with a construction plan, which we never did because they never talked to us about any of the construction. Ms. Boyer encouraged them to have a community meeting with us preceding this hearing. We met Valentine's night. The meeting was without much detail. Quite honestly, the fact that we weren't able to reach agreement at that meeting is a reflection on the relationship. I, as you know, do real estate permitting and land use, and I like to come out of those meetings with agreement from neighbors, things like hours of operation, other issues that may be helpful in mitigating disturbance. There was no intention coming out of that meeting to reach those kind of resolutions, which is demonstrative of the relationship. I think the applicant is used to playing according to their own rules and sort of living in their own world, and this appears to be sort of a new process for them. We as neighbors want that to improve. We want to be able to have a predictable relationship. Stanley is great. He's been communicative. Just don't think he gets the authority that he needs probably to be as helpful as we'd like. I think the various neighbors, we did have a meeting at my law office with a bunch of the neighbors. I think our concerns are the timeline, the scope, and really just coming to you all for help to resolve the end game here, because, you know, and I don't want to be overly judgmental, but we just don't get the sense that all resources are being used to resolve this. There does not seem to be a sense of crisis. We're also well aware that ultimately that generator could go on for as long as necessary if there's a power outage, because it serves a utility. And so ultimately, outside of the testing, the generator could go on for 2 weeks if there were a major crisis in eastern Massachusetts. So getting the generator to a livable point, obviously below the noise ordinance, but as livable as possible, is the end game. You are the experts. I have a great amount of respect for the job you do. Using your authority in this case to make sure that the generator is actually up to code as quickly as possible permanently. I'm not an expert in noise issues. It seems to me that they could do all kinds of buffers in the basement, make sure that where we live is a series of big walls, and it's noise just goes off all the walls like a ping pong. So if anything that happens in the lot goes off the brick wall to my house, but then anything outside of that, and Andrea knows because she's been out there, it's a big empty parking lot in front of that, so it bounces off that too. But if you could use your leverage here to make sure that ultimately the generator is compliant, and if possible even more than compliant, because the testing is one piece of it, and obviously having predictable testing hours is important, and to have them on a short leash in terms of getting this resolved. But ultimately, it's the generator itself and that being compliant, because that thing could go on at any time, and you can't sleep, it's unlivable when that was on. So those are the things that would be, I think, really helpful for us. I also think, as a general matter, I can't figure out who's in charge over there. I represent some pretty complicated institutions. I can't figure out who's in charge. So no one's perfect, and things will go wrong. A contractor's going to show up early and They're going to set up an empty dumpster and throw one piece of wood at a time in it at 6:45 in the morning. Those things happen. We don't really have a point person in general that actually appreciates the fact that they're in a residential neighborhood and a grandfathered use with neighbors that are trying to be cooperative. And so I just don't think they've fully appreciated that this relationship would work better if we were cooperative and communicative and working together towards a better end.
Thank you. Mr. DeMent, quick question. When did you guys, so I know that the temporary generator was put in and then the permanent generator was put in. When did Verizon become aware that the permanent generator was in violation of the noise ordinance?
I think that was December 7th.
December 7th yeah. was the first test. They made some adjustments, and then I tested again the following week on December 13th.
So since December 13th, Verizon has been working to create plans, and they're not completed as of March 13th. Is that correct?
They will be finished this week.
So what has been the holdup?
The sound study, the process to get it done. We had to do additional sound study to determine what is the best course of action. We are going to be installing, like Anthony said, sound panels in the basement so it doesn't reflect the sound. We've looked at many, many different ways to try to correct this problem, whether remote radiators and stuff like that. So there is a discussion phase and how to come about and to meet with Stan and to meet with the community and try to make sure that they understand that we are trying to do the best for the community. That is the goal, ultimately, to get it down below the level that it's acceptable to everyone around us. We understand, and we will get there, you know, and, you know, I'm sure we'll be held to a higher standard, but we will get there.
No, you will be held to the same standard as everyone else. You're
that,
just expected to comply with the ordinance like everyone else.
We are, and so it has taken some time for the design. They are working on it. Like I said, I can share this with you today. It'll be stamped, I'm sure, by Friday. And then we'll be meeting with the contractor first part of next week. We'll get the equipment on order, and we'll start. Now, there will be some excavation to install this, and we will be under the construction permit and on the construction requirement.
The temporary, and either you or Chief Ware, I don't know who knows the answer to this, the temporary generator, that one is completely outside of the building, correct? And then this one, the generator is physically in the basement, but the exhaust, for lack of a better term, is outside?
The air that passes across the generator exhausts outside, and that's what is creating the noise, the intake air and the exhaust air. Not to do with the combustion air. That's a separate issue.
And the makeshift wood barn that was created for the temporary one,
right.
That can't be transferred to this one to sort of alleviate while you find materials and do installation and all that stuff?
The outside generator is for construction purposes, for the transfer, for when we were converting the old generator, tearing it out and putting in the new generator. That is surrounded around a whole generator enclosure, so no, it can't be put down into the basement.
No, I don't mean in the basement. I mean on, you know, that metal thing that you have against the wall that is...
That is the baffle.
Yeah.
That was designed.
No. This one, the one that I just circled. That's part of the new...
Yeah. Okay. Would you like to see the design?
The wood stuff I know is the temporary one. The one I just circled, that's part of the permanent generator, the one
correct.
That's non-compliant, correct?
And that is a cedar fence that we put there in hopes to alleviate some of the sound and
the cedar
and the
fence is for the temporary one.
No, I'm sorry. The cedar fence is for the permanent gen. It exhausts out through that baffle. This
so
big box is the permanent generator.
The big box is
the temporary generator.
There's a side, like a 4-foot wall on each side that you got to put some of the acoustical blanket on the side of that.
Yes.
You're asking if more can be added to the front of that to help.
To the front of that, is there?
Does it need airflow?
I mean, because I get what you're saying, and I saw that you have that acoustic blanket, but I mean, quite frankly, I don't know that it's doing anything. I don't know that it could, but I'm wondering if something like what you created for the temporary one could be created, which was. If I'm not remembering incorrectly, was created pretty quickly after Andrea put your feet to the fire on this.
Yeah, why don't we try? I mean, I'm sure we can do something. I will ask the coast coordinator.
I don't know because I don't know if that's system. But what I'm wondering is, and what I hear from the residents, I mean, we got a bunch of emails, and I know that they have been given to you. So I just, what I hear a lot from the residents and what I just heard from Mr. Gallucho, and quite frankly, what has been our experience throughout this entire process, which is much longer than 2018. I mean, this has been ongoing since 2017. Is the fact that there seems to be molasses driving this rather than a little bit faster pace here. Now, I understand that this generator is very important for emergency communications, but you also have a lot of residents that live nearby. And so we have to balance that out. And I'm wondering, while you're waiting, because quite frankly, you're saying that it's going to take 6 weeks to construct. You haven't finished the plan. The plan will probably be stamped by Friday, but that doesn't mean that it will. By the time that you talk to someone, you order the materials come in. I mean, we're looking at a minimum, I'm assuming, of a month before any work is going to get started.
The fabrication of those materials are going to take much longer than that.
So, you know, I'm wondering. If you have done anything for now while you wait for the larger installation, other than those blankets, or if there's anything else.
I don't know if it will really make a significant difference, but that's up for the acoustical engineer to determine that. But yes, we can do something.
We definitely have plenty of wood to work with.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So let's try it, you know. I can't guarantee you what you're asking for. If it's going to help, great.
Well, I'm just wondering if you can just ask the question about the acoustical people. I mean,
right.
They might just say by the time we install it, the other stuff might be in.
Correct.
And again, if we're just talking about the 1 month, the 1 month event, it might not even make sense to create more noise to create this thing around it and
right.
everything else. But again, my thing here is that it doesn't seem like you guys are exhausting all of your avenues. To try and get this into compliance with the noise ordinance. And so aside from discussing your special noise variance and considering your needs and the needs of ECC communications and the needs of the residents, we also have to consider the ordinance and the fact that, you know, if it's not an emergency situation, which these tests are not, then in theory we could be fining you $300 every time you run it. So let's try and get to a place where we can all live with whatever's happening. I'm sorry, were there any other residents that were going to speak to this?
Could I just add, would it be possible, Madam Chair, for you to, and I don't want to add more agenda items, but maybe an update in 3 months, not through Ms. Boyer as to the progress, because based on the experience, they'll be back here in July asking for an extension, and it may be good to get an update. I know the contractor's not here, the engineer's not here, the people that are actually doing the work to build it aren't here, so maybe get an update in a few months as to progress so we know where we're at if you should decide to approve some testing over the next 3 months as a matter of noise variance.
Thank you. You had a question.
So I received a letter yesterday, on Monday. And a resident made the following statement that on the 18th of December 2018, the generator ran in a non-emergency situation from 8 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. Is that correct?
That was the 18th?
That was the cutover for our power interruption. So we brought in a new utility service. We had coordinated with the neighbors, and they were aware that it was going to run from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Okay.
At 3:30, Stan and I received an email saying everything is good, we'll be done. I get a call at 7:30 saying we ran into problems. Well, that problem escalated until roughly 11 o'clock that night.
Closer to 12.
So at what point does it constitute an emergency? It was an emergency because we didn't have commercial power available in the building.
Right. As I said, the resident wrote about this. I wanted to get clarification as to an explanation as to what caused it.
Right.
Hi.
My name is Ron Klieger.
I'm sorry?
Ron, R-O-N-N, Klieger, K-L-I-G-E-R. I live at 42 Trowbridge Street, and I face the back of the Verizon building. So much of what I have to say overlaps. Actually, I won't say it, but I want to add a couple new things. First of all, I want to make sure it's understood that our history, our neighborhood's history with noise violations from this building goes far back beyond December 18th. In my letter to the board, I have a detailed log of my experience, and it goes back to December of 2015, where we had multiple issues with HVAC units on the building, and repeated attempts to correct that with a molasses-like paste, and failures to correct it. So we in the neighborhood really have little confidence that Verizon's going to actually accomplish what they say they're going to accomplish within the time frame they're going to accomplish. Now, having said that, I'm not here in opposition to the variance. I'm here in opposition to the terms that Verizon is seeking with the variance. And I was happy to hear that they're agreeable to having a predictable hour in the month for testing. That's good. And I'm also happy to hear that I think perhaps you're leaning towards restricting the duration of the variance to align with the construction. The other thing I'd urge you to consider is restricting the hours of the day of the construction. I think their application asks for 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And based on our experience with construction at the Verizon building in the past, 7 a.m. does not mean that disruption starts at 7 a.m. What it means is that disruption starts at like 6:30 a.m. when the trucks start pulling in and backing up with their beepers. So what I would ask for, and I think most of my neighbors would ask for as well, is that the construction hours be limited to something more reasonable, like 9 to 4. Most people, I'd say most overwhelming majority of people, will be up by 8 or 9 o'clock, and it avoids interference with our dinner hour, where, again, we've been subjected to a lot of excessive noise. So those are the things I have to add. Everything else is, Anthony had already mentioned.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else here to speak on Verizon's application? Okay. Anything else?
May I respond to the request for shortening the hours of construction? We are aware that we've not done a great job with the neighborhood, and we are a work in progress, and we are working diligently to improve our communications and our sensitivity to balancing the needs of operating this facility, which does, as we've mentioned, perform a public safety function, and the needs of the residential community around us. And we have work to do, and we absolutely acknowledge that. As far as the construction period goes, I think it is a goal that we in the neighborhood share that the sound attenuation equipment be installed as expeditiously as possible. I don't think a great way of accomplishing that goal is to shorten the number of hours that we are able to do the construction. It will inevitably lead to dragging out the construction period if we can't operate during the standard City of Cambridge construction hours. And so so I would hope that that would be kept in mind, that, you know, there is this need to balance how quickly we can get it done if we're doing it in shortened hours. The other thing I would like to note, and this is, we're happy to have this as a condition to the variance, we understand that there is some frustration in terms of not being like a point person for neighbors to go through. Mr. Yusevich has been very good about trying to do email outreach, holding meetings, etc. But we would be happy to designate a particular individual at Verizon, you know, provide someone's name, phone number, who could be accessible in the event that, you know, something goes wrong, an emergency arises, or people have complaints about construction impact as we're trying to get this done. And that's something, that's information we're happy to email out to the communication list and even post on the back of the building if someone walks up and, you know, has an issue.
Quick question. Best case scenario in Verizon's terms, like best case scenario in terms of finishing your plan, getting it stamped, getting the contract, ordering materials, getting materials in, when is your best guess, with all of that in utopia, when is your best guess that you would start doing construction?
Um,
And don't give me a conservative. Give me your best case, but realistic
May
best
15th.
Case.
Or April 15th. April 15th. I would like to get the material ordered like we were talking about simultaneously while we're doing the construction outside. So I think I'm could be started by the week of the 10th through the 15th.
And then you said if you start, let's go with the April 15th, tax mm-hmm. day. We start tax day, you're saying it's probably 6 weeks of construction?
I guess, yeah, because it's 4 to 6 weeks on the material to order it. I can expedite that material and hopefully bring it in within 4 weeks. So.
Okay, let's talk 6 weeks because that will
right.
probably, especially because in Chief Boyer's experience, it usually you order the material, but it's not the fact you're ordering it, it's also that it has to be built, correct?
Delivered, yeah. shipped.
And yeah. Verizon is not fabricating it, correct?
No.
So you have no control over that?
Correct.
So let's think 6 weeks. 6 weeks, that takes us to when? Someone have a calendar?
April 28th, 26th.
6 weeks from today is 24th of April.
Yep. Okay, so we go to 24th of April, and then 6 weeks, you say, to for construction?
June 5th.
June 5th. Okay. And Attorney Schneider, you're saying that part of the variance is also in the event that the construction is above the ordinance. So are you expecting the construction to be above 86 dBA?
No, absolutely
okay.
not.
Okay. So this is my sense. This is what I'm. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I was just double checking with my client because when they filled out the application, they did ask for with respect to construction, and I wanted to make sure that we were not failing to describe some sort of excessively noisy construction activity that's contemplated.
Yeah, there is a DBA level for the City of Cambridge for construction.
86.
Yeah. And that's why we would go below that.
Any other resident? No. Okay, so this is what I'm thinking. I am not going to grant a variance for construction because I don't think it's needed. I'm also not going to grant a variance through July 26th. I would say that we grant the variance through, what's the second Wednesday of June?
12th.
Through June 12th. That we grant it for the one time per month testing for 1 hour. That we go with the second Wednesday of every month at 10 a.m., which had been an hour that had worked in the past for the other generator, and that we can administratively change that if we get the neighbors, if we get a majority of the neighbors to tell us that they voted and they want another hour within a 9 to 5
Monday to Friday.
Monday to Friday.
No nights, no weekends.
No nights, no weekends.
No holidays.
No holidays. I don't think we have any Wednesday holidays coming up, so I think Wednesday works well. And then I say that if by the next Wednesday, which would be July, what's the second Wednesday in July?
The 10th.
Oh, actually, Chief Boyer, you've tested this generator?
I have.
Is it a violation of the noise ordinance?
It is.
Okay. So if by July 10th, so basically if by July 1st, we do not have confirmation from Verizon that they have finished, mm-hmm. then on July 10th, or that first meeting prior to July 10th, if we have one, do we have a meeting on July? Oh, we don't have meetings yet. We'll have a meeting prior to July 10th. For a noise violation against Verizon.
Okay.
And then we'll proceed from there. In the meantime, if Verizon finishes the installation, you will reach out to Chief Boyer to do a test. And that test will be informed to all the residents as to when it'll happen so that it doesn't have to happen on the second Wednesday or whatever. It will be covered through the variance provided that it happens before June 12th. Otherwise, you'll have to come back and ask for it. Also, I would say that there needs to be the name of a person, that's the contact person, the designated person that will inform the residents this is going to happen, this is not going to happen, all the jazz. The point person is going to be communicating with Chief Boyer as to when the stamps were given on the plans, when the materials were ordered, who was hired to do the work, when the work is going to start, name, email, phone number.
I would also suggest that in addition to a point person for residents to contact, that Verizon be proactive in communicating with the neighbors, the residents, on a weekly or biweekly basis, an update as to the status of the project. Don't wait for the public to complain. Notify the public in advance what's going on.
Okay, so biweekly updates from Verizon to residents and license commission, aka Chief Boyer, to the variance granted only for the monthly one time for 1 hour, second Wednesday, 10 a.m. through June 12, 2019. 3 point person.
I have your email.
Name, phone number, and email.
Send a copy of the decision to all the residents. I'm not sure if it's wrong, but it's a long one. Biweekly updates from Verizon to residents and license commission. Variance granted only for the monthly one time for 1 hour, second Wednesday, 10 a.m. through June 12, 2019. Point person with name, phone number, and email. Also posted per your suggestion. Test of attenuation covered by variance provided it happens prior to June 12, 2019 and notice of at least 1 week given to residents and the license commission, aka Chief Boyer. And then noise violation hearing prior to July 10th, if no end to attenuation by June 12th, 2019. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And we'll send you a copy. Do we have your contact information?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you
great.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Some water.
Disciplinary matter, club, Desportivo Valens, 1121 Cambridge Street, all alcohol club license, 11628 for violations of Mass General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 23 and 64.
Yes,
sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Oh, no.
Anyone who's going to testify, please stand and raise your right hand.
Stand and raise your right hand.
Do you swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. You may take a seat. Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Chief Mahoney. For the record, my name is James Rafferty, R-A-F-F-E-R-T-Y. I'm an attorney with offices at 907 Massachusetts Avenue in Cambridge. Seated to my right is Ursilia. Sorry, E-R-C-I-L-I-A, Nunes, N-U-N-E-S. Ms. Nunes is a officer of the club, a witness to the incident, and will also serve as a translator with the commission's permission because Mr. Joseph Estes, E-S-T-U-E-S, is the president of the club and was also on the premises at the time of the incident.
Thank you.
Tyler Bubenick, B-U-B-E-N-I-K, licensing investigator.
Thank you. Ms. Nunes, can you stand up for a second? Do you solemnly swear that you will translate everything that is stated to you accurately to him and everything that he tells you accurately to us?
Yes.
Thank you. Go ahead, Investigator Bubenick.
So the following information is based off my investigation of a September 23rd CAD and police report where an employee of the Felonese Club alleged she was assaulted by a member of that club.
Hold on. Is he understanding all of that? Because if it's not, you have to tell him.
If I put the phone card, who do you think it is? Can you go? Was it hard to do? So on the floor?
Yes. Okay, so in the report states that a member had become verbally and physically abusive with an employee after being told that he had to settle a bill from the previous night. After the argument, the bartender threw a drink at the patron who then rounded the bar and assaulted an employee, that employee, the bartender. On October 6th, I spoke with Joe, the vice president of the club, who told me that he wasn't present while the assault took place, or he didn't witness it, but basically gave me kind of Miss Ferreira Griffo, who is the victim's account. I also spoke with Ronald Colo in November of the same year, 2018, who, again, didn't witness the event, but kind of gave me more or less Ms. Ferrero Griffin's account, the same that was in the police report. There was one distinction, though, when I talked to Mr. Colo, and that was of the timeline. According to Ms. Ferreira Griffo's timeline, the patron came in on a Saturday night, then they returned on a Sunday, and then they were told they had to pay the bill from the previous Saturday night, and that's when the assault happened, and then on that same day they went and filed the report with the police. According to Mr.
Okay,
Colo.
Okay, hold on, because she has to translate.
Okay.
Ich habe jetzt eine Paranoid, Probleme mit dem Schiff, und Kurse der Leute im Prior.
According to Mr. Colo, the police weren't notified until the next day. And then finally, in November 2018, I spoke with Mrs. Ferreira Griffo. And her story is the same as she wrote in the police report. She did tell me that there were no physical threats made towards her prior to the assault.
Anything else?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Investigator, did you learn as a result of your investigation whether any criminal complaints were filed in this matter?
I know that there was a case that's continued until June of this year. That's per Detective Dave Albert. As long as there's no incidents for either side, it'll be dismissed.
In the case, do you know who the defendant is in that case?
I do not know who the defendant is in that
case. I believe there are cross complaints. And so if neither one gets in trouble, they will both be dismissed.
Yeah, I haven't been able to corroborate that, and I didn't know if the commission had information on that. I did speak several months ago to Mr. Bellotti, who represented the patron. The patron had not yet filed a cross-complaint, but there was a pending complaint. I was informed by Mr. Bellotti, by the employee, and my efforts to gather additional information have been unsuccessful in terms of the court proceedings.
I believe what Detective Albert's information was that there were cross-complaints that were continued to June of this year, and if nothing else happened, both of those would be dismissed.
Right. Okay, so I think factually we have two witnesses here, and the information which was reported, contained in the police report, is really would appear from the investigation by the club pretty uncontroverted. This event took place on a Sunday morning, and it's a typical quiet time in the club. And I could have the witness describe. She was there on Sunday morning as part of her. When I say Sunday morning, noon to 1 o'clock in that range. The club only opens at noon, and Ms. Noons was in the club. Cleaning it from the night before.
Well, we have her testimony.
Okay, so won't you?
Yes.
So can you describe, were you present at the club on the Sunday in question here? What were you doing and what observations did you make?
We were cleaning from the previous night, from the function. And people usually come in after Mass to have their coffees and very quiet.
How many people would you say were at the club at the time you were there?
Maybe 5 or 6.
Yeah.
That was it.
And how long did you remain on the premises?
I left, I stayed there until 1:45 or so.
Okay. And did you notice whether the individuals described in the report were present at that time?
He was walking in when we were leaving, so.
He being the patron?
Yes.
The member?
Yes.
And then was the bartender on duty at that time?
She was just starting. She started at 12.
And do you have any understanding of who hired her, what the circumstances were under her employment?
She was she went and talked to the president. She was looking for a job. She came from a different club, and he told her to come in to see what hours was available, and he called the other place for reference, and she came in to work a few hours.
So this was her first day?
It was maybe the second week, but she didn't work every day. Only worked 3 days a week.
Okay.
Jumping ahead then, at some point you learned about this incident later in the day?
Yes.
So you didn't observe the incident?
No, I think she discussed. She left as the patron was coming in. So, so in terms of direct eyewitness to the events, no, she didn't see that. But you did have a conversation with her after that, correct?
Yes, she called me later on that day.
Okay. Could we then ask the president then, was he present at the time in question around 1 o'clock?
You need to ask him that.
Let him make the answer.
No,
he was in a kitchen.
Okay. At some point, was his attention. When you're in the kitchen, can you see what's going on the bar?
No.
You have to ask the question.
Vocês podem ver alguma coisa quando estão dentro da cozinha para fora?
No.
So you didn't see the incident? Can you ask him that?
Pois então não vi o que aconteceu. No.
At some point, was his attention drawn to the bar?
He heard inside of the kitchen, stop, the people in the bar.
Okay.
And he came out.
And what happened then?
E depois, quando ele viesse para fora, okay.
Não, quando ele vinha para fora, eles estavam os dois ao pé de do outro, ele e ela. E ele depois pegou em si e foi-se logo a ver.
And inside, he was right next to her, and then somebody has caught him out, and she's taken.
When you say he was inside, can you ask him, what do you mean by that? Inside the bar?
Estavam do lado dentro da barra ainda?
Estava na entrada, quem entra para a barra, perdão.
Okay, they were like, not inside, it was like on a corner as you go around. Yeah.
Is it fair to say that, did he ask people to, did he do an investigation, ask him to find out what happened?
O que é que perguntaste a algumas pessoas, o que é que tinha acontecido?
What did he learn?
Yeah, eu perguntei a um ou dois que estava lá, teve um que não quis dizer nada, o outro disse que ele tinha estado mal com ela, tinha dito um palavrão ou dois em ela, ou uma coisa assim.
He asked the people that was there, one or two didn't want to say anything, but somebody said he called a bad, an ugly word. That's why.
The patron called the bartender an ugly word?
Yes.
And then what happened?
And then, o que é que aconteceu depois disso?
Não, quando eu cheguei...
O que as pessoas disseram?
Yes, aquela que... Não, ele foi-se logo embora também. E as pessoas também, eu não ouvi mais nada ali, que um foi para cá, o outro foi para lá, e aqui buscou. Ela foi-se embora para a sala depois. Ela foi para a sala e depois dali um quarto de hora ou 15 minutos. Ela veio-me dizer, homem, vou para casa, ainda vou trabalhar aqui mais
Mas
hoje.
Quando ele chamou ela de nomes, foi quando ela tirou de vida, não é?
Yeah, foi quando ela tirou.
So when he called her that ugly name, she threw a drink on him.
What happened next?
He threw a drink back at her.
Did he? He talked a long time.
Yeah. And then after that,
what happened?
After that, she went in the hall, and she said she was embarrassed to go back in the bar to work, and she wanted to go home.
I'm sorry, officer. Are you here for this matter?
Yes.
Okay. If you can please come up. Sorry. Officer, your last name again, please.
It's Drew. It's D-R-E-W-I-C-Z.
And officer, did you took in the report?
I did.
Okay, and what was reported to you?
She came into, Miss Grillo Ferrer came into the police station about 3 o'clock on Sunday, the 23rd of September. She came to the front desk. She stuck, she got punched in the face while she was at the Felonese Club. At 1121 Cambridge Street. She was with a Mr. Fuller, who stated he was from Portugal, was visiting. And he brought her in, and initially he started to tell me that she got punched in the face, and then she took over and she told me that the previous day, Alberto Carrero came in to the bar, and I guess he wanted a coffee. And apparently there was some dispute over whether his brother, I guess, may have been with him, or he didn't get served fast enough because they had run out of glasses. And then he left because he was a little upset. And the next day when he came back, about 1 o'clock on Sunday, I guess it was, I guess the other Saturday, or the previous Saturday, so when he came back, she told him, she said, I politely told him that, you know, I have to charge you for that coffee, you know, and then I guess there was some exchange, and she stated that he called her a whore, and she said she had a small amount of beer in a glass or a bottle, and she flicked it at him, and she said that he stormed around the counter and punched her in the head a couple of times, and I did note she had left side of her face, I believe, was swollen right around here. I think there were pictures taken later as well by Detective Albert, or I think it was of the full extent. I guess she said that somebody came out, and it was either Mr. Fuller or somebody in the kitchen physically removed him from the bar, Mr. Carrero. I think that was it. I asked her if she needed any medical attention at the police station. She said she didn't, but she said that Mr. Fuller said he didn't see the assault, but he heard the scuffle outside. He may have been in the kitchen, and they said there was a witness, Dioniso Ribello, and I guess I took two pictures. I don't happen to have them with me. initially of her face. You can see that it's slightly swollen on the left side. And that's pretty much it, what she told me. And she gave me a description of Mr. Carrero. And I think Detective Albert followed that up.
No questions?
Did she tell you that she got punched in the face?
Ela disse que ele levou um soco na cara.
Ela disse, mas ainda vi isso de alvo. Nada, ainda vi não.
Yeah, she did.
Did he observe any injuries to her? Did he discuss her condition?
No, he just told me that she told him that she got punched, but he didn't see any pain in the face at that time.
Does he know whether this individual that is alleged to have assaulted, has he ever been back in the club?
No.
Is he permitted to return?
No.
Is she still working there?
No.
Why didn't anyone call the police?
Porque ninguém chamou a polícia no final.
Não havia motivo nenhum para isso e não
He thought it was nothing to.
So wait. You have an employee telling you that she got punched in the face, yes or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But you didn't think that that was important enough to call the police?
Ela talvez se não acha que isso era uma coisa importante.
Não, acho. Mas é que aquela coisa também ia ser...
Yeah, he said yes, you should, yeah. But it was like, yeah. You didn't know what to do, so you just...
Questions?
No.
Anything else, counsel?
No, I think the facts, as I said, between piecing together is a consistency to all of these reports, and I think it was always an open question who the aggressor was here. Mr. Bellotti tried convincing me that it was the employee, that her throwing of the drink. It didn't strike me that the response here would risen to the level of self-defense, so I don't have any understanding, as I said, of what happened in the criminal proceeding.
Well, it depends what you believe, because your client first said that she threw a drink back, or that the patron threw a drink back, and now they're saying that she told them that he punched her back.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think both occurred. I think there was an exchange of liquid, is what I heard and what I read.
Can you ask him specifically what she told him happened after she threw the drink at the gentleman?
What happened next after he threw the drink at her? What did she do?
No, she threw the first drink.
She threw the drink, sorry.
After she threw the beer at him, what happened?
What did he next do, Jamal?
Não, ainda havia ela tirar a cerveja.
Pois, mas o que é que ela disse? O que é que as pessoas disseram? O que é que tinha acontecido depois?
Não, as pessoas não me disseram nada. Eles nem sequer perceberam bem o que é que aconteceu ali.
She threw the drink at him.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw it back at her. That's when I think he lost it and... And she told them that he punched her.
She threw liquid at him, he threw liquid at her, and then he punched her.
Well, I think...
Can you repeat that for the witness?
Ela tirou o drink a ele, e depois ela tirou para ela, não foi?
Não, o drink ele não atirou para ela, porque ela não tinha nenhum drink para atirar para ele.
Mas eu acho que ele tinha...
No. Translate what he said.
Yeah, just say what he says.
Yeah. Não, porque...
He's telling me she threw a beer at him,
mm-hmm.
But he never threw anything at her. Because he didn't have a drink on his hand at that time. He had a coffee or something. Right?
Não, era... Eu acho que ela chegou lá, pediu um chefe, não sei o que era, se era o whisky, que era. E ela, depois, quando houve a discussão, tirou o chefe da frente dele e deu com o chefe para pagar a bola.
Oh, ok. So, I guess he had asked for his coffee and a shot. And instead of
give him the shot, I think she grabbed the glass and threw the shot at him.
He stunned his feet.
Okay. All right.
He didn't specify he wanted it in the glass.
Anything else?
No. So, Madam Chair, I think in this scenario, the fact pattern would suggest, obviously, an incident occurred, that the employee was treated improperly. Whether she was justified in her reaction, it's not clear. And I assume some court of jurisdiction took a look at that question. But I think the relevant standard for this commission on issues involving the permitting an illegality to occur upon the premises under the CMRs on this issue is the responsibility of the licensee is to exercise sufficiently close supervision so that there is compliance with the law on the premises. Most of these cases, as you know, have an underlying act of criminal conduct occurring, whether it's underage drinking, drug dealing, I think. This was a setting that was perfectly straightforward. We've got witnesses who testify, nothing out of the ordinary going on, and an altercation between these two occurred. And I think the licensee, one could comment on whether the licensee should have called the police. I think that's a question for concern or deliberation by the commission. But in terms of the conduct of the premises, in terms of did they in any way, were they negligent in the supervision of the premises or their employees that permitted this to happen? I would say the record doesn't show rise to the level of that type of evidence here, and that it's not a case that would warrant discipline against the licensee.
Thank you. And just one final question to him. Did she tell him that the patron hit her?
Ela disse que ele viveu um foco a ela.
Ela disse.
She did.
Okay. No. Thank you. Okay. Well, with that said.
What did he say?
He's telling me that he said he didn't punch her. I think he only grabbed her hair. That's what he told her.
Okay.
All right.
With that said, I think whether the the female employee, I think throwing the drink at this gentleman, even though she called him or he called her an awful name, I think under our rules in terms of improper contact with an employee, I mean with a patron, and, you know, with regard to violations of the law, I think that's an assault and battery, regardless of whether or not she used her hands throwing the drink at him. I think it's not a reasonable reaction to it. It certainly should not be if you're someone that works in a club. So I find a violation for that. And I also find a violation for failure to call police, and I'm very concerned that regardless of whether the club believed her or not, now you have an assault. Not only do you have her reporting that she did something to a patron, but that the patron did something to her, and yet no call was made to the police. I find that pretty bad. And as with the previous case that we heard earlier today with similar type of situations, I would vote for a one-day violation on each for a total of two-day suspension, sorry. That's what I would vote.
Madam Chair, can I be heard on that?
No, because we're voting at this point.
I mean,
we're voting at this point.
The facts are amazingly different.
We're voting at this point.
The only mitigating factor for me would be that the employee is no longer employed. Employee was terminated, is that my understanding?
Was she terminated or did she leave?
Well,
the person bought a Natalia.
Well, can I ask a different question? You have a telephone.
I asked the question first. You can ask the follow-up question. Was she terminated or did she quit?
I'm suggesting that she can answer that because she had a direct telephone conversation with the employee. She doesn't need to put it through him.
She called him.
Okay.
She called me that. I'm not sure if it was that night or the next night. And I told her she won't be back to work.
You fired her?
Well, no, because I had talked to him about it and we decided not to go back.
So you fired her?
But she...
No. Who fired her? If you're telling me that she got fired, I need to know who fired her.
So, no, decisão para ela não vir mais para trás foi feita por a gente.
Sim.
Quando ela chamou.
Ah, bem, mas... Yeah, quando ela chamou. Yeah.
Pois. Yeah. He made the decision, but she called me.
Did you make the decision to fire her? Can you ask him that question?
Fizeste a decisão para ela não vir mais trabalhar.
Yeah, fizemos a decisão todos.
Yes.
Yeah.
To me, that is a mitigating fact. I am troubled, too, by the failure to contact the police with respect to the altercation. But to me, the mitigating factor is they took a disciplinary action against the employee and terminated
him. Okay, so what would you suggest, if anything, in terms of discipline?
One day.
Would you be amenable to one day on the failure to call police and then one day held in abeyance for a year on the other matter?
Yes.
Okay. You'll receive a statement of reasons.
Okay, thank you. So it's a violation on permitting an illegality on the premises?
So it's a violation on counts 1 and 2 together, one day suspension held in abeyance for 1 year, and a violation on count 3, one day suspension to be served.
Okay, when you say count 3?
So you see your 1, 2, 3? 1 and 2, violation together. Your hearing notice.
There's one on it.
Nope, the one for dated February 26th.
Oh, I see. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
They also have the next hearing.
Oh, yeah.
Change of officer.
Right now? Yeah. Okay. We're taking a 5-minute break.
Okay.
You guys here.
Back on the record.
You can stay here. We'll finish this up.
Application Club Desportivo Felen.
Did you sign that
one? For a change of officers and directors.
And good afternoon again.
Good afternoon. For the record, James Rafferty on behalf of the applicant. The licensee has filed a change of officers and directors. The new officers and directors are listed in the application. Two of them just testified in the prior case, Mr. Estes and Ms. Nunes. Also Carmine Bonapane and Joseph Silver are members. There's also a change of manager present at the witness table is Ms. Jishana. I'm sorry, Jislana, how do you spell that, please?
J-I-S-L-A-N-E-C-E-L-A-N-E.
Ms. Delaney has been employed at the club for almost 10 years?
7.
She's now going to be serving as the manager.
Jesus Delana, that's your last name?
Yes, Jesus Delana.
Okay. And did you provide, I didn't see it here, the list of new officers and directors, the actual list?
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah.
It's the, just these that are listed there?
Right, that's okay. Listed with the state.
Yep, all right, excellent. Okay, and Ms. Jesus Delana, have you been a liquor manager before?
No.
Okay. And how long have you been working at the club?
7 years.
7 years? And is that your only experience in the food and beverage industry? Have you worked at other bars before, other places that sell alcohol? And are you familiar with the rules and regulations of this board, the ABCC, and the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with regard to sale and service of alcohol?
Yes.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions?
Nope.
With that said, I would vote to grant.
Granted.
Granted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Disciplinary matter, Four Seasons Food Service Incorporated doing business as Coriana, 158 Prospect Street, for violations of Mass General Laws, Chapter 138, Sections 2364, various CMRs and board rules for being over capacity and failure to comply with press control measure.
If you could please stand up and raise your right hand, and Mr. Bubanek, you're still under oath.
No, we're
managers.
But whoever's going to testify, please raise your right hand. You swear the testimony you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. Please take a seat. And for the record, your name, please.
Tyler Bubanek, licensed investigator.
This is a Yong Mo Sun.
Okay, how do we spell his name?
Yong, Y-O-N-G, M-O, last name is Sun, S-O-H-N. He's on record,
manager of record?
Yeah.
Okay.
My name is Jay Chung, manager of the restaurant.
How do we spell your name?
J-A-E, last name is Chung, C-H-U-N-G.
J-A-E?
E, yes.
Okay.
My name is Yunhee Cho, Y-U-N-H-E-E, last name is C-H-O.
C-H-O? Mm-hmm. And you are?
The manager of the restaurant.
Okay. All right, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Bubanek.
My first inspection of Coriana was on December 1st, 2018. It was a Saturday, about dinner rush time, 7:30. At that time, I counted 123 people in the restaurant. The maximum capacity is 100. Additionally, I counted 117 seats, and maximum seating is also 100.
Okay.
I performed a follow-up inspection January 12, 2019, again on a Saturday, around the dinner rush, 8:15 p.m. At this time, I found no violations with capacity or seating. I did, however, find that the manager on duty, whose name was Yunhee Cho, she was unable to produce the restaurant's crowd manager paperwork book. Additionally, she said that she was a crowd manager on duty, but her certificate had expired in November of 2017, and there were no other certified crowd managers on site at the time.
Thank you. Any responses?
We have two more managers on duty on managed crowd management certificate. We did that, and we're following up the procedure every night.
Mm-hmm. And then I did also test also the.
So we have a
okay. Yeah, I'll take them if you have them to give them to us. Yes. Thank you.
I brought the two.
So now you have been recertified?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have two, I think he has it too, but he
yeah.
didn't bring it, I think.
Okay. And then in terms of the overcrowding on December 1st?
Yeah, first time we, actually that night we bought some extra chair because a lot of crew came that night especially. So after he left, and we take the old seat out and we tried to put that 100 seat, less than 100 seat. Then a lot of people, you know, that night was really cold night, so a lot of people waiting inside. So after that we tried to, take the phone number from the customer and then let them wait car or somewhere we call and then try to manage for less than 100 people.
Okay. And you have been operation since 2013 approximately?
Yeah. Yeah, June. I started June.
And no issues. Mm-hmm. Have any questions?
No.
Okay. Do you guys have anything else to add?
We try. You know, Saturday night was really honestly really busy night in our restaurant. So, but other night no problem at all. But there's a little bit of problem with Saturday, so we try to our best for this the phone number and people. And then usually summertime they wait outside, and people sit on the bench with outside. But especially winter time, so we try to let them wait in the car or.
Investigator Bubanek, the on January 12th, was this the first time that you saw an issue with the crowd control manager stuff?
Yes, on the previous occasion, I was given the crowd manager paperwork, and there was a crowd manager on site.
Okay, all right. With that said, I would find a violation for both, usually with the first crowd paper manager stuff, and considering what they did and the fact that in the previous time they had been in compliance, I would issue a warning for that. In terms of the overcapacity, I would say, based on their record and what we've done in the past with similar cases, I would say a one-day suspension held in abeyance for 6 months.
I concur with that.
Okay. We'll receive a statement of reasons. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go on.
Disciplinary matter, S&S Restaurant and Delicatessen Incorporated, 1334 Cambridge Street, for failure to comply with crowd control manager requirements on October 18th and November 6th.
Good afternoon. Please stand up and raise your right hand.
Swear the testimony you're about to give to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Thank you. Could you please state your names for the record?
Gary Mitchell.
Tyler Bubanek.
Go ahead, Mr. Bubanek.
Okay. I originally visited S&S Restaurant and Deli on Friday, September 21st, 2018, as part of a routine task force inspection. At that time, I found that only one certified crowd manager was on site and that the establishment was unable to produce their crowd manager paperwork. A warning letter was sent on October 4th, 2018, which outlined violations including only one crowd manager being on site and not being able to locate the crowd manager book or paperwork. And it gave 14 days to correct the issues, said that a follow-up would be performed, and failure to correct the violations might have consequences. I re-inspected the establishment three times following my initial inspection. The first was October 18th, then again November 6th, and then again November 29th, all of 2018. On these occasions, the crowd manager paperwork had been filled out, but not every day.
And was there a crowd manager on duty?
That was resolved, yes. That was corrected.
So on each...
Two. There were two.
So on each follow-up, there was a crowd manager on duty, but there was not... The paperwork wasn't completed.
Correct.
Mitchell?
Well, as you all know, my family has owned and operated probably the oldest licensee for establishment in the city of Cambridge, celebrating our 100th year. Personally and professionally, I want to apologize to Tyler and to the board. Since then, we've had we have multiple people that have passed the test. We have that in our book. We have our book here, which we leave by the cashier's desk. Shame on us for not doing this properly. I don't believe we were in any violation in terms of occupancy, egresses, exit signs of that sort. We are licensed for 302 people. And we've done our own surveys. I don't think we've bumped 302 ever. We have 40 seats outdoors, which brings us from 262 to 302. My staff watch the video, they understand the seriousness of this, and in fact, every morning we are certain that being a family restaurant, those high chairs aren't blocking one of our egresses. So we have four distinct rooms, two different egresses. It was a paperwork mistake. Again, I personally and professionally apologize. Tyler has much better things to do. And I think a few times he ran into me, I offered him a cold drink at the SNS. But you're welcome anytime to come in. We don't believe that this was unintentional. In this little book, which is actually quite handy for us, it has the, I don't mean to laugh at all, the sprinkler report, the fire extinguisher, all of the reports necessary. So it's kind of one-stop shop here. Yes, there was only two people that watched the video. I had a lot of sleepless nights when I owned Riles. I sleep very soundly just with the SNS now. We will be in compliance. I apologize.
Questions?
No. And we are in compliance. We have it. I didn't photocopy all the pages. And we're open 363 days out of the year. We will try our best to have 363 reports.
Okay. With that said, I would find a violation. I would say, other than the warning letter that they received, there's no history, no recent history, and frankly, I don't see any history otherwise. I don't know. I seek your guidance on this one.
I would just say a warning is sufficient. I think it was an unintentional paperwork error. There was no indication of overcrowding at the time.
No.
Nothing that you found nothing else amiss?
No, they were never in danger of being over capacity. It was just the crowd manager paperwork, and initially, only crowd manager, one crowd manager on site.
Warning?
Yeah.
Okay, violation warning. Thank you.
Application 450 Kendall Hospitality Incorporated, doing business at Glass House, 450 Kendall Street, for an alteration of premise to add an additional patio space of 2,400 square feet.
Glass House? Oh.
Yes.
Good afternoon. Could you please state your name for the record? You may sit down.
TUDD BENNETT.
Thank you. Oh. And Mr. Bennett, we received an updated plan which shows the southeast plaza. Very well delineated, not the entire plaza.
Correct.
And that's the section that you're seeking to go, the highlighted one, into, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Can you tell us the need for this license or the extension?
The need is we have a lot of corporate parties out there. We've also been doing some trivia nights, some stuff on the weekends basically for kids and families, as well as Biomed has asked us to do numerous events for them as well, who is our landlord.
And right now you already have part a patio there. This is just a natural extension of that to the end of the property line, basically.
Correct, yes.
Okay. How are you going to secure that extra patio area? Because I know that there's like already built-in stuff there. So are
correct.
You
we would have door staff or host staff standing and basically not letting anyone leave the area with any type of alcohol drink.
I did have a question on your application. There's a mention here. Both answers are... The question is, will the landlord receive revenue based on percentage of alcohol sales?
They won't.
Okay. So do you mind crossing out that yes and then initialing it? Because you answered yes and no.
Well, yeah. Originally we looked at it as... were we paying rent for the space?
Okay. So just do you have a pen, if not?
Sure. Thank you so much.
Just cross out the yes and initial it. The very last question.
Gotcha.
Well, I'll take you a better notification.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And this is all private area, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Do you have any questions?
I do not.
Anyone in favor of this petition? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay, I would vote to grant.
Granted.
Granted. Thank you.
Thanks to the board.
Thank you.
Chowdery Incorporated, doing business as University Market, 1105 Math Ave, for a change of offices and directors and a transfer of stock.
Good afternoon. Oh, you may sit down. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Yeah, Resbul, R-E-G-B-U-L. Chowdery is last name. C-A-S-O-W-G-H-U-R-Y.
Thank you.
Mahmuda, M-A-H-M-U-D-A. Last name is Chowdery. C-H-O-W-D-H-U-R-Y.
Thank you. Okay, and you are the proposed manager of record, correct? Did we get that? Yep, we got it. Okay, so there's a few things here missing. Did you bring the completed applications? They're not completed because they're not signed. That's the last note that I sent.
Yeah, did you bring... I asked your son to make sure you brought signed copies.
Yeah.
Is this your signature?
Where did we pull up?
If that's not her signature, she's the one that needs to sign.
The manager has to sign. She needs to sign it.
So just cross it out. Can you just take the pen, cross it out, and have her sign it? Thank you. And then, so this is now just going to be a 50-50, no, I'm sorry, it's just going to be 100% on your name, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And you will be a director, but no beneficial interest. Tell us about your experience in the food and beverage industry.
I am working out here the last 13 years.
And are you familiar with the rules and regulations of this board, the ABCC, and the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with regard to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Yes.
The transfer of Rabiul to you, was there any issuance of stock? Was any money paid or anything for that?
No, just mutual. So.
Okay. So I think the ABCC is going to request you to write something, an affidavit attesting to that, but we'll see. It depends on the investigator sometimes. Okay. Do you have any questions?
I do not.
All right. I would vote to grant.
Granted.
Granted. Thank you.
Thank you,
board. We'll be contacting you if we need that extra paper, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Classic Restaurant Concepts, doing business as the Asgard, and Classic Restaurant Concepts, doing business as Enfoca, for transfer of stock and new stockholders.
And also for change of manager for the Asgard.
Oh, sorry.
Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your last name for the record?
Good afternoon. William Goodwin, W-I-L-L-I-A-M. Goodwin, G-O-O-D-W-I-N.
Okay, Mr. Goodwin, if I understand that this is sort of something that came up during renewals and it's just a cleanup, is that correct?
That's correct.
It's across the board also to the Boston ones as well, correct?
It's, yes.
And for the record, can you tell us about your experience? Have you been a manager of record before?
I'm currently in bulk manager of record. I've been the manager of the record at the ASGAD in the very beginning. In the last 15 years, I've not.
Okay. And are you up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regard to sale and service of alcohol?
Yes, I am.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Yes, I do.
Okay. With that said, I would vote to grant on granted. Both. Yeah, granted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Goodwin, you'll probably receive a letter also that we'll need I forgot. You need to sign this one as well. I don't think you signed this one. If that is not your signature, just cross it out and sign. That's your manager application.
That's me, Blaine J.
That's him.
That's your signature?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it. Thank you.
Lulu Cuisine, LLC, doing business as Shepherd, 1 Shepherd Street, for change of LLC managers, change of ownership interest, transfer of stock, and change of DBA to Loose. They're also requesting an exemption from Cambridge Quarries for certain shareholders.
Give me 1 second.
Hmm? Could be either way.
Oh, Luce?
Well, Luce is my daughter.
I know.
So. Well, Jeffrey, what do you want?
What change on the floor here?
Is that my car?
Yes.
You recognize? You can tell.
All right. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Good evening, Madam Chair. Chief Andrew Upton, UPTON, for the licensee, with owner and manager Renee Becker, RENEBECKER.
Thank you. Okay, and last time you were here, Mr. Becker, it came up that there had been some changes to the ownership that had not yet been approved, and hence we're here today, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, go ahead, counsel.
We are applying for a change of DBA held over from the last time. It's a change of the name. Shepherd is no more. It is now Luce, a more casual, more neighborhood restaurant. And there is the cleanup of the stockholders. We previously, Renee bought out his main partner, Susan Regis. So he has taken her share of the stock. But otherwise, everything is the same. We have requested that certain previously undisclosed minor investors be exempt from disclosure. They have no operating role. They have no control over the restaurant. They're completely passive. So we applied under the ABCC beneficial exemption rule for them. And then I was told that that had to be duplicated for the Cambridge process, so we are requesting that as well.
And then, I'm not sure if we got into this, because I remember that the shareholder stuff came up. Can you tell me what Luce will be? Is it Luce?
Luce or Luce, either way. Luce is my...
Luce? Okay, so tell us about Luce.
It's a neighborhood restaurant. Serves vegetable-driven starters, pizza and pasta, and a couple of main dishes. All of which could be shared, or it's more family oriented than it was before and more casual.
Okay. Is there going to be any changes to the floor plan?
No.
Okay. And only because of the history of this location and the operation, you understand that Commissioner Wardell's decision and order of June 19th, 2017 is still standing.
Correct.
In terms of the use of solid firewood and charcoal as a culinary source.
I'm happy not to use it.
Okay. The wood fire is gone?
We haven't had a wood fire there for 2 years.
and there's no intent to reinstall it with loose?
No. The oven was always rigged for gas. The pizza oven was always rigged for gas. And so we just don't use it.
Okay. Counselor, do you have anything else?
No, that's it. We're just talking about the DBA and the ownership cleanup, and just looking forward to the new contract.
Anyone in favor of this petition? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay, if you could please come forward, state your name and address and the basis for your opposition.
Okay, I guess it's not actually technically an opposition.
Your name first.
Oh, sorry, Deborah Zucker. I'm at number 3 Shepherd Street.
Okay.
And I guess not in opposition to the restaurant, but there are certain issues that I feel are important, one of which you just mentioned, which is the wood burning. I live directly abutting this restaurant on the 2nd floor, so I am directly across from the roof of this restaurant. I've lived there for 23 years. That's way before Shepherd and even before Chez Henri, which was the predecessor. So the two concerns that I have are, number one, what you mentioned, which is the wood burning and the use of any solid fuel. And I guess I was particularly concerned because I recall that at the original hearing for Shepherd, when this same owner was asked by this commission about the plans for the restaurant, there was no disclosure of the intent or about the plans to use wood burning at this location.
Well, to be fair, Ms. Zucker, I'm very familiar with that transcript because of the case that ensued afterwards that this commission held. So I did read the transcript. There was no question specific to it because we do not ask that specific question. I only brought it up, and as you heard, I did so because of the history of this location with regard to solid fuel and Commissioner Wardell's current decision. I just want to make it very clear because I don't want us to go down the path of accusing that there was misrepresentation when the commission did not ask the question.
Okay, but there was a question. There was a question, what's your plan and what kind of food were you going to serve? And the response was, it will be pretty much like Chez Henri, Frenchish. So we'll leave it at that. All I'm asking is that given that the topography has not changed and neither has the adverse effects of solid fuel, I would request that the prohibition of using and burning solid fuel be a part of any approval issued for a restaurant at this location, whatever the name or whatever the ownership. My second issue regards noise, and specifically the ongoing noise violations from the equipment that is on the roof directly across from my windows. This was first reported to you, and your staff documented it back in October of 2016. This has not yet been resolved. There are repeated noise level readings when the equipment from Shepherd, and I have done them also since it's become loose, and the levels are often above the allowable levels. It affects sleep, it affects my ability to enjoy my home in the evenings, and I am frankly perplexed why it's been permitted to continue for over 2.5 years. The name is now being changed, but the equipment and the noise problem remains, and I would ask that action be taken in the very near term to remedy this situation.
With regard to the noise issue, the noise issues with regard to Shepherd's equipment were resolved and they were in compliance, let me finish, according to Chief Boyer's investigation, and it ended up being Starbucks and the other one that were. However, based on your information now, I will send Chief Boyer to take readings, but the noise case against Shepherd was resolved as of last time that it was before this board.
Okay, I just have to point out that these instruments are turned on and off. And if you come and measure it when it's off, it can be read as fine.
With all due respect, Chief Boyer had every equipment on individually and then all simultaneously. So I will say that and I will represent that because that case was resolved as to Shepherd. I'm not saying that there may not be a current noise violation at that roof now, but we will certainly send our investigators to take care of it.
So I would appreciate, given that that stoppage of the measuring was back in when the health department gave their notice, that, so that's over a year plus ago. And the noise is still persistent. But I would hope that even though it's being changed, the name has changed, that it won't be another 2.5 years before this can be resolved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Attorney Upton?
I'd just like to state for the record there are no outstanding noise violations. There are no investigations to our knowledge. There have been no written complaints to the owner. Should anyone wish to discuss it, whether in the public or from the City of Cambridge, we're certainly glad to. But as of this moment, I don't believe there's any pending issue whatsoever.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. With that said, I would vote to grant. And, I mean, the only thing that I would suggest is to put a... is in terms of the grant, is just to remind the licensee that Commissioner Wardell's decision and order of June 19, 2017 is still standing and applies. And otherwise, unless Commissioner Wardell issues another decision allowing the use of solid fuel, no solid fuel can be used at this location.
Right. We are aware of that decision. We are in compliance with that decision. We have no plans to violate that decision, and we understand the consequences if we do. You know, it seems to me the continuous reminding of us by certain neighbors, including another group that has hired an attorney to remind us of Commissioner Wardell's decision, is somewhat unnecessary since it's not going on. That being said, we brought a picture of the pizza oven burning gas fuel and the regular oven that burns gas fuel in case anyone insists on seeing for themselves. And if anyone would like to visit, we'd be glad to show them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Application, Newtown Line Liquors Incorporated, 2451 Mass Ave, for transfer of the all-alcoholic beverages package store license held by Norton Beverage Company. Same location.
Good afternoon.
Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
My name is Attorney John Moradian, M-O-O-R-A-D-I-A-N. Democus Law Offices, and Lynn with me is Kailash Patel, and her husband Rakesh Patel.
Thank you. Go ahead, Counselor.
Yep. So today we're here to seek the board's approval of a transfer of the liquor license currently held by Norton Beverage Company, DBA Norton's Liquors, to Newtown Line Liquors, Inc. Kailash Patel will be the sole shareholder, officer, director, and the proposed manager of record. She is very experienced in retail sales. She does own other stores in the area, not in Cambridge, but in the greater area. No history of violations. I think she needs to recertify her TIPS certification, but otherwise we will do that. We're seeking transfer of the license, approval of the pledge of the license to our Upland Trust Company. They are financing the transaction. There's no changes to the property, no changes in the outlay,
no changes in the floor planning.
No changes in the floor plan. I understand that the Welches have owned this business for I think close to 40 years, but no changes to that. Closing will occur, you know, once we are approved by the town, the city, and the ABCC.
Thank you. And if I understood it correctly, Kailash Patel, you will be the sole beneficial interest holder and the manager of record, and then Rakesh Patel, who's the husband, you will own the real estate.
Yeah, the way we had a structure for financing reasons was to split the deal up.
Okay. All right. And you have been a manager of record on a liquor license before with no disciplinary issues with the local boards? There was one with ABCC, is that correct, or no?
No.
No issues at all with anyone? And are you up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regards to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yeah, I am.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Counsel, you said that they own, your client owns other liquor stores in the area. Where are they located?
She owns a store in Everett, Wakefield, and Lynn.
Everett, Wakefield, and Lynn?
Lynn, yeah. Okay.
With that, anyone in favor of this petition? If you could please state your name.
Hi, I'm Michael Brandon. I'm the clerk for the North Cambridge Stabilization Committee, the neighborhood association for this area. I live about a block and a half away from the site. I spoke to Rakesh and invited the Patels to come to our next meeting on the 27th to introduce themselves and explain their plans. My understanding is that it's pretty much going to operate the same as Norton's has for many years. And I know that Matt Teven, the manager, has had some health issues now and is looking to retire, and we certainly want to ease the process for him, but we're also glad to see a long-standing business that does serve a public need in North Cambridge continue. One question I had was about the other package stores. I thought Rakesh said something about a Somerville store also.
Oh, yeah. I own Somerville.
Okay. You're liquor license?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're going to own the building where this is going in, right? Okay, and I guess, again, we haven't, you know, we had a meeting. We look forward to it. But the concerns are that, you know, Matt, for many years, has run a nice, clean operation, no violations. And there is now a child care, daycare center immediately next door. There are schools nearby. There are, the bus, small residential houses. So, we look forward to continuing the operation as it's been. Over the years, there have been some issues with parking, but they're usually, they're resolved. On my behalf, I can't speak for the organization until we meet and speak, but I would like to see the transfer go through based on the record.
Thank you. Anyone else in support of this petition? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay.
You keeping the same name?
Yes, same name.
Okay.
I was Newtown.
The same DBA name.
Oh.
Yeah, same DBA. Same.
Yeah, it's not on here.
Norton's Liquor?
Right,
Norton's. Yes. Okay. With that said, I would vote to grant, including the pledge that was not listed on the agenda, but
I added it on the amended agenda.
It is on. Oh, okay. All right. So granted.
Granted.
Thank you. The abutter notification. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Application Salt and Olive, 1160 Mass Ave, for a change of location to 36 JFK Street.
Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Chief Andrew Upton, UPTON for the licensee. With me is Mary Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. The owner and proposed manager of record.
Thank you. I have one thing. I went to the location. This is not on the second floor. This is on the first floor.
They technically refer to it as the second floor because John Harvard's is seen as the first floor.
Not in the building per se. If you go to the building and you walk,
yeah,
all the signs say second on the what would be quote unquote the third floor.
Yeah.
So I just want to make that clarification. I wanted to know, did the second floor come from the lease agreement? I didn't see it there either. Or where did the second floor come from?
It came from the landlord told us to list it as the second floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was their request.
If you prefer, we're glad to list it as the ground floor, first floor.
Yeah, I mean, it is an odd building because there are tiers to it, but the way that they identify it on the building per se, the second floor is where Newbery Comics is.
Right, but the landlord tells us that when you're on Dunster Street, you're coming up to the second floor.
It is an odd building. Absolutely agree.
But we're calling it.
It was a parking garage.
What address are we using for it? Maybe that, because if we use Dunster, yes, it would be. But if we're using the JFK Street,
36 JFK Street.
Okay.
Is our mailing address?
Yeah. I looked quickly through the lease thing here, and I didn't see. Yeah, so see, it says it right there, a space on level one, the first floor above street level of the building. So I would suggest, Counselor, that we change it to on level one, and then parentheses how it's listed on the lease, the first floor above street level.
Fine with me.
And then I wanted to clarify, only because I see this in Cambridge a lot. We are certain that the address is going to be 36 JFK and not Dunster, correct?
That is correct.
Even with ISD and everything, 36 JFK,
that
across
is
the
correct.
Board for
across
everyone?
Across the board.
Beautiful. Thank you. And now you may start, Counselor.
This is for Salt and Olive. We believe the character and fitness of the applicant has been tested. They've been a licensee, same ownership, same manager, down on Mass Ave on the edge of Harvard Square for several years. We believe there is a public need based on the landlord's essentially recruitment of this operation for the space, based on our support from the Harvard Square Business Association and several neighbors, letters of which you hopefully have received by this time. I believe both the technical requirements are met and the applicant's record speaks for itself, but I thought I'd let her talk a little bit about why she wants to make this move, why it's important to the business, and why hopefully it's good for everyone involved.
Sure. We've been open since August of 2014. Our business is really focused on two main areas. We offer unusual flavors and ingredients and gifts from around the culinary world, but we also focus on food education and classes. That's a big piece of the equation for us. It's about food education. In our first year, we were lucky enough to be voted Best New Business by the Boston Globe. We've been nominated four consecutive years by the readers of Scout Magazine as Best Specialty Food Store, as well as Best Gift Store. So I think we have a great amount of loyal customers since we opened in 2014. We're particularly excited about the move to the garage, number one, because the traffic will be significantly higher, and obviously for a small business, that is a very, very important piece of the equation. And the second piece of the equation is that we will double our footprint from a store space standpoint, which will enable us to offer more products, more varied products, in addition to what we already carry, which are organic spices and teas and oils and balsamics, one of the largest salt collections in the United States. We are adding fresh pastas and sauces. We are talking to a meat purveyor as well as produce, if we can get CSA drop-offs, things like that, just so we can offer more to the Harvard Square community, things that are a little bit more difficult to get.
But it also allows us to designate a specific area for classes so that we can really focus on increasing that piece of it, because that's something that we really love to do. So those are a couple of pieces of the equation that are really important to us. And there's no question that the beer and wine license, which we acquired in 2017, you know, we're all watching brick and mortar change before our very eyes in the age of Amazon. So the beer and wine license helped to solidify and strengthen our business. We will need it to do the same thing for us in the garage, even with increased traffic. It's already the number two part of our business. So it is a pretty critical piece of the equation. So the garage is an important move for us to stay local and stay dedicated to Cambridge.
And you will continue being the manager of record, correct?
Yes.
Is the space in the garage larger than the current space?
Two times the size.
Twice the size.
Okay. And are you up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regards to the sale and service of alcohol?
I am.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone in favor of this petition? I would say we receive support from Trinity Property Management President John DiGiovanni. We also received an email from Birch and Annie Manushagian. I'm sorry, I'm probably butchering those names. We also receive emails from Michael and Danielle Hestern-Grader. We also received an email from Denise Gilson, which I'm unsure whether she's sending as Harvard Square Business Association Executive Director or as patron, but she is also in support. And that is all that I have received with regard to that. Anyone else? Anyone in opposition to this petition? Okay, I would vote to grant.
Granted.
Granted, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have the other notification.
I have two slides.
I won't. Do you want me to tell them all together?
No. Well, yes. I mean, Clover, just come up.
All of us. Okay.
And then we'll
and then 355 Main Street for change of manager.
We'll go right in order.
To David Gonzalez.
Yep.
1075 Cambridge Street for a change of manager to Christopher Anderson. And 1326 Mass Ave for a change of manager to Jasper Hoitsma. Is that right?
Perfect.
Oh, great.
Okay, good afternoon. Could you please
updated?
Okay. State and spell your names for the record.
Robert Christensen, RobertChristensen.
David Gonzalez, DavidGonzalez.
Chris Anderson, CHRISANDERSON.
Jasper Hoitsma, JASPERHOITSMA.
SAN?
SMN Hoitsma.
Oh, thank you. All right, so 355 Main Street, we are changing to David Gonzalez.
Correct.
Yes? Okay. And Mr. Gonzalez, have you ever been the manager of record on a liquor license before?
I have not.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about your experience in the food and beverage industry?
Clover, 3 years, and I was with Starbucks for 11 years.
3 years at this location?
No, a year at this location.
And are you familiar with the rules and regulations of this board, the ABCC, and the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with regards to the sale and service of alcohol?
I am.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
I do.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Okay. I would vote to grant.
Granted.
And just to confirm, maybe Mr. Christensen or Mr. Anderson, either of you can confirm that there have been no changes to the beneficial interest holders of 355 Main?
No.
We are changing to Chris Anderson.
Correct.
That's Christopher Anderson.
Correct.
And Mr. Anderson, you are an approved manager of record, correct? Somewhere?
Moving you from Harvard, from 1326 Mass Ave.
But you are currently an approved
yes.
manager of record, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And you have had no disciplinary issues with the ABCC and this board. It was just noise related, but not alcohol related, correct?
Yes.
And are you up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regards to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yes.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
I am.
Okay. And you will stay up to date?
Yes.
With that said, I would vote to grant.
Granted.
Granted. And can you confirm the same for this one, that there have been no changes to the beneficial interest holders of 1075 Cambridge Street?
No change.
Okay. Thank you. And then moving on to 1326. How do I say your last name?
Hoitsma.
Hoitsma. Thank you. And Mr. Hoitsma, have you been a manager of record on a liquor license before?
I have not.
Can you tell me a little bit about your experience in the food and beverage industry?
Yeah, I worked for Rialto for 2 years, then for Clover for 5 years as a general manager in multiple locations.
Excuse me, did you have just the top one?
No, because, yeah, just the top one, because they had the wrong name on the other one, so that's the amended one. And how long is this location?
2 years. One year, yeah, a gap in between the back and forth between
okay.
multiple locations.
And are you familiar with the rules and regulations of this board, the ABCC, and the laws of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with regards to the sale and service of alcohol?
Aye.
And do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Absolutely.
And then no changes to the beneficial interest holders of 1326? Okay. So with that said, I would vote to grant.
Granted.
Granted. Thank you.
Disciplinary matter for Oat Pizza, 181 Mass Ave, for failed to comply with an order of January 7, 2019, transfer the privilege of the license and or changes to the beneficial interest holders and manager of record without approval from the board and the ABCC.
Okay. Good afternoon. Could you please state and spell your names for the record?
I am Josh Huggard. That's H-U-G-G-A-R-D. And I'm Peter Croteau, C-R-O-T-E-A-U.
C-R-O-T-E-A-U. Okay. Did you bring a completed application?
I do not have a completed application, no. I have an application that is filled out, but it is not signed. I did not have the chance to get it signed by the new COO, Drew, who has been away for the past few weeks.
Okay. Now...
We could have that signed by next week.
Okay.
Easily, yeah.
So, Josh, yes?
Yes.
So what is your role at Oath?
General manager.
And do you have any beneficial interest in the license?
No.
And Peter, what's your role at Oath?
Finance and real estate coordinator.
And no beneficial interest in the license. And do either of you have any knowledge as to the beneficial interest held in the license?
So for the license, so the Oath 181 Mass Ave is an LLC. It's a single member LLC.
Okay.
That's owned by our organization, Next Level Pizza, Inc. So there has been no change in beneficial interest or things like that. What did happen, which caused the change of directors and managers, was the CEO did step down in November, and we hired a new COO who took over as the role of president, and the CEO was the president before.
And, sorry, go ahead.
Where is Next Level Pizza based?
Boston.
And do they own more than one establishment?
Yes.
How many?
12? Yeah, we just went to 12.
Is the only one in Cambridge yours?
Yes, the 181 Mass Ave is the only one in Cambridge.
And there were no changes in terms of Next Level Pizza Inc., is that what you're saying?
Yes.
And who is the manager, who is supposed to be the manager of record at this location?
The manager of, the last manager that was on the license was Nicholas Peter Aroni.
Mm-hmm.
He was the last person who was as the manager there.
Who's the manager now?
Josh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't understand.
Sorry.
That's okay.
And we don't have a completed application from you to become the manager of record?
Well, the original one was signed by him as for the manager on record.
Yeah.
And I have an application that he could sign to that.
Do you have a corporate vote that allows him to become the manager of record?
I had it in the original one. And then I believe it was signed by the new COO, Drew Keller.
Whose signature is that?
That is Drew Kellogg, Andrew Kellogg.
That's the new COO?
Yes.
And this is your signature?
Yes.
And then you're saying that Drew Kellogg is the new COO, but he's not the beneficial interest holder of the license?
No, Next Level Pizza is the
okay.
Beneficial.
Because, I mean...
Can I explain a little bit about the application?
I think you need to, because,
I will definitely explain.
This all came up during renewals.
Yeah.
Very specific correspondence was sent.
Mm-hmm. And it was sent...
To and from. Even Next Level Pizza people, like, you guys changed your tune, like, 3 different times.
Yep, and I would like to try to explain that.
Yep, hold on.
Yep.
And then now we get an application that's half done. But then in the application that was submitted, we have Kellogg as 100% owner. So,
okay.
Please.
I worked for the director of real estate, Greg Rainforth.
Okay.
He was the one who was in correspondence with you, I believe, a lot. He no longer works for the company. His last day, I believe, was January 14th, which is a week after we received the first letter, which was January 7th. After he left, it all fell onto my lap. And I was not fully trained in it. I asked a lot of people in our organization if this was the right thing to do to put Drew as the 100% beneficiary, because it was told that we needed to do a change of officers form. And so because that had happened, that is just what I did. I wasn't aware that Next Level Pizza would be is the beneficiary of it.
Okay, so to be clear, the only person that was corresponding with this office was Peter Cottreau.
Me.
That's you. We have emails from you and to you, and the only other person that contacted this office with regard to this was Julian Hickman and Patrick Hellstrand.
Yes.
Okay, so you mentioned Greg. Greg, I believe, was only included because he was actually disclosed the first time, and we included him, but he never replied to us.
Oh, I'm sorry. He was replying through the Viewpoint, I believe it was. He was one of the correspondents on there. But Patrick Hellstrand, he was the CEO who had left. And so done the first, when we were renewing the licenses, Patrick Hellstrand was the CEO.
Okay.
And then during that time, between November and January, he left. He left in the end of November, beginning of December.
And then the last stuff that we have from you is January 24th. The letter gave you until January 25th, and then you were contacted after you submitted the application, but we never received a response.
What was the correspondence?
I know Chris contacted you to ask you about it, and then Ms. Lynn.
And I spoke to...
Is your name Elizabeth?
Yes.
You spoke with me.
I spoke to somebody else who said they were going to call you,
yes.
And I told you what we needed.
Yes, and I believe you said like an organizational chart
yep.
from the November and
yep.
then the present one, which I have. Would you like to see that I can get that for
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the new COO's name?
Andrew Kellogg. Or Drew Kellogg, as he goes by.
And when is he supposed to be back?
He will be in the office next week, I believe either Tuesday or Wednesday.
Tell me about your experience in the food and beverage industry.
Yeah, I've been in the food and beverage industry for about 20 years. I've operated my own chain, and now I'm a GM over at Oath Pizza.
Have you ever been the manager of record on liquor license before?
Yes.
In Massachusetts?
Yes.
Did you have any disciplinary issues with the local board or the ABCC?
No.
And are you up to date with the rules, laws, and regulations with regard to the sale and service of alcohol?
Yes.
Do you understand that we expect you to stay up to date with those rules, laws, and regulations?
Yes.
Where was, you operated your own chain? How many stores?
25 stores.
Really?
Upper Crust Pizza.
Oh, okay.
And then that was the manager on record at our Chestnut Hill store until about a year ago when we transferred it.
Which Upper Crust, the one with the issues with the IRS and the employees?
Yeah.
From renewal confirms that Next Level Pizza Inc. continues to be the owner, and that there were changes, that the changes were basically the officers. So then Patrick and Len, who were the officers of Next Level Pizza, are those gone as well?
Patrick is gone.
Len continues to be at Next
Level.
He's
the general counsel.
And then in terms of Oath, 181 Mass Ave LLC, it's the officers and directors that changed?
The manager just changed.
General manager.
But the officers and directors?
No.
What were you going to say?
Well, if the application isn't properly completed, I would suggest we wait till it's properly completed.
Yes. But they're also before us for the... for violations. So what we're saying here is that there has been no... no transfer or changes to the beneficial interest holders of the license, but there have been changes to the members...
corporation.
...of the LLC and the manager of record.
Yes.
Okay, this is what I would suggest. I would suggest a violation on count 1 and 2. And no violation in terms of the transfer of privilege of the license, but everything else on count 2 that's listed there. I would suggest a 2-day suspension, and I would suggest that they have until Wednesday of next week to submit a completed application. Otherwise, they will be in front of us in March 27th for the indefinite suspension of the license until they correct all matters.
I would concur.
Okay.
Could we request just until Thursday of next week, just to make sure that Drew is
in
back
town?
In town?
Where is he?
So he was in Vegas. Then he was in Navy.
Well, he was there for the Pizza Expo.
Yeah, the pizza. Yeah,
and then
pizza.
He lives down in D.C., but he comes up to our office.
Does he have email?
He does, yes.
You can sign them and email them, scan and email them back to Wednesday of next week. It is.
Okay, as long as it doesn't need to be a hard copy, that's fine.
Okay. You'll receive a decision letter and a statement of reasons. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Rangzhen, Tibet.
Second call.
Yep, can I ask what you're here for?
Well, actually, I'm here for an administrative matter.
Which
item
one?
Item
24. We're almost there.
Oh, no, turn to construction.
We're almost there. Okay.
Okay, Rob Palange, on behalf of the Harvard Coop, for an entertainment license for background music only at 12th Farmer.
Granted.
Consideration, request from Kim Courtney on behalf of Coffee Shop LLC to refund the Cambridge local quarry fees for her package store license application.
So as the permanent head, I would usually make this call and issue the refund. However, I put this before the board because, as you know, we didn't run the quarries because the applicants submitted the release and the fee late. And although we have denied the application and there's really no need at this point to run the quarries, because the denial has been appealed, and although I am confident that our decision will be upheld by the ABCC, there is a possibility that the ABCC returns it to us and asks us to reconsider, which means that at that point we would have to run the quarries. Because it took us basically 2 months to get them to do it, I am inclined not to refund the fees now. If we're upheld at the ABCC, we'll refund the money then.
Concur.
Okay. So basically, request denied pending resolution of appeal. If appeal resolves in the favor of the license commission, the fees will be refunded. Otherwise, the quarry will be run and the fees will not be refunded.
Okay. Emil Giordano, Turner Construction, has applied for a special noise variance, March 13th through June 28th.
Personally, I'm not the applicant.
Yeah, he's not. Are you here because your company told you to come?
No, actually, I represent MIT, who's the owner. We're talking about case 24.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just came over to express MIT support.
Okay, give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a special noise variance from March 13th through June 28th, alternative dates the 18th through the, I don't know that there were alternate dates, starting the 18th. originally they wanted to start today, so a alternative start date would have been the 18th. Obviously, I don't know that they would be able, unless we approve it now. And this is basically to deliver, offload, and install exterior wall. All departments said that this was necessary. This would be weekdays only from 6 p.m. to 12 a.m. I would vote to grant. Granted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Montero on behalf of Turner. Special noise variance from March 14th through November 15th. Alternate start date of March 18th. Saturdays and Sundays, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. and weekdays, Saturdays and Sundays from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay. And this one, there were no particular issues raised. It's supposed to be inside work as well.
They give the address?
Yeah, the address is at 145 Broadway. So for this one, I would also vote to grant with two conditions, that they obtain Sunday work permits and only for delivery of materials during the variance hours and no construction during those hours.
Concur.
Leanne Paul Citroni, applied for Harker Peddler license.
Granted.
Mohammed Safo, change of DBA to Aleppo Palace, and a change of the floor plan. I still did not receive the floor plan from him. I requested it again.
I would hold off.
I would defer on this then.
The License Commission has received notice that NOR Transportation is purchasing Medallion 56.
Board acknowledges.
And that Christie Cab is purchasing Medallion 40.
Board acknowledges.
Consideration of reasons, statement of reasons for matters heard on February 13th, 2019. Eugene F. Lynch, 30. Inman Exchange. House Inc. Chef Group. I think that's all of them.
Did you say House Sink?
Yep.
Yep. I would approve as to all.
Concur.
Minutes for January 16th, January 30th, February 6th, and February 13th, 2019.
Approved as to all.
Concur.
Items added to the agenda after the original posting on March 11th. Curtis Petrini on behalf of Consigli. Applied for special noise variance March 18th through 28th with alternate date of March 20th through April 7th from 6 p.m. to 11:59 p.m. at 125 Monsignor O'Brien for installation of overhead protection on the Gilmore Bridge.
Is this the one you're here for?
Yes, sorry. Okay. I thought I wasn't supposed to talk.
I'm sorry, what did you just read into the record in terms of the hours? No, in terms of the hours.
6 p.m. to 11:59 p.m.
Okay, there has been a change since this was submitted based on the request from Jim Wilcox from DPW. The requested hours are 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. And the dates are from March 18th through the 28th, and then in the alternative, from April.
March 20th to April
7th. March 20th to less than that. They're seeking just 9 days, although they didn't count them, and it's only weekdays, so Monday through Friday. Basically, they need 9 weekdays, 9 consecutive weekdays. So the alternative 20 and then add 9 consecutive weekdays after that. It would only be weekday work. They're not working during the daytime, so it would only be 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. Based on Jim Wilcox's request, because of safety of pedestrian and vehicular traffic, I would vote to grant.
Just have one question. What is the, could you elaborate a little bit on overhead protection, what's being installed?
So it's going to be a staff scaffolding system with, unfortunately I don't have the exact drawings on me.
Is this for the Green Line work?
No, it's for the work going on at the Cambridge Crossing development. It's DIBCO's Parcel H project. We'll be driving piles by there.
Okay.
And with the machine, we want to keep the pedestrians safe along that way.
Very good, thank you.
Christine Ford. So that's granted.
Sweet.
With the amendment as the chair read.
Chief Boyer will be sending you guys something tomorrow.
Awesome.
On it.
Thank you
okay.
very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Christine Ford for an alcohol with entertainment license on March 16th from 4 to 10 for a party.
Granted with two conditions, a 5 p.m. start time per permission letter. I'm sorry, if you're going to be talking, please take it outside. And the alcohol must be sold.
Jacob Crawford, new dance complex, malt and wine license at 536 Mass Ave.
Granted with the amended hours per the permission letter, March 15th, 6:30 to 10:30, March 22 and 23, 7 to 10, March 24th, 6 to 9:30, and March 30th and 31, 6 to 10:30.
Jun Young Kim, entertainment license, 58 Plimpton Street on April 6th from 7:30 to 11, a concert.
Granted with an amended closing time or end time of 10:30 p.m. per HUPD sign-off and police detail required.
Josh Cook, Porter Square Books, entertainment license, 25 White Street, March 16th, 8 to 10 for a concert.
Granted.
Jennifer Lee, entertainment license at Geological Lecture Hall, March 30th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for an anniversary, 20th anniversary reunion.
Granted.
Paul Clark, Malt and Wine with Entertainment, 64 Sydney Street, March 24th, 9 a.m. to 12 noon for a road race.
Granted.
One done. Stephanie Dival on behalf of Work Bar, Malt and Wine license on March 28th from 5 to 10 for a networking event.
Granted with the condition that alcohol must be sold.
Eric Propp on behalf of the Garment District, a malt and wine license at 200 Broadway, March 21st from 6 to 9.
Granted.
Aaron Gillum for an entertainment license at MIT Stratton Student Center, 84 Mass Ave.
Granted and with amended hours per MIT sign-off start time of 8 p.m. on the 15th, 16th, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, and start time of 4 p.m. on the 17th.
Andrea Campbell has applied for an entertainment license at MIT Kresge Auditorium.
Granted with police detail required.
Melvin Moore, alcohol license at Cambridge Community Center.
Granted.
Lisa Zhang for an entertainment license at 52 Oxford.
Granted with an end time of 9 p.m. per HUPD sign-off and police detail required.
Scott Fraser on behalf of Jose Mateo, Malt and Wine with Entertainment, 400 Harvard Street.
Granted, there's a request here with regard to the waiver of the fee based on a partnership or sponsorship with the city. City manager was unavailable, so I was unable to confirm the partnership or sponsorship of the city on this. So I would vote to grant as is, and then administratively, or unless you provide me the okay, if the city manager says that this is a city event, that we waive the fee. Otherwise, if the city manager says it's not a city event, we do not waive the fee.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Jeffrey Thompson on behalf of the Sinclair Malt and Wine License at the Atrium on May 4th from 6 to 8 for a fundraiser. Fredrick York, Venus Communications, special noise variant for removal of manhole covers, 301 Binney, 20 Quincy, 239 Brookline, 185 Putnam, March 25th through 29th, alternate date of April 5.
Granted it to all and all of them with the condition that they need DPW and utility work permits.
Edward Breed on behalf of Skanska, special noise variance, March 14 through 15, alternate date of 15 through 18, for water main shutdown at 70 Bishop Allen.
So basically, this, they're not going to work during the day. They only are doing it at night. The reason why the 6 p.m. to 7 a.m., because they're going to shut off the water and they don't want to interrupt business. That's why we vote to grant.
And that is a city project. Pedro Morales, a one-day alcohol and entertainment license, March 16th at Sanders Theater, 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. for a concert.
Granted with police detail required.
Second call, Antonio Dorville.
6:28. He's not shown up. What time is it? 6:28?
Yeah.
So no action on that one.
Kalu Farasia.
6:28, no show, no action. Officer Benny, since you're here, can you make sure to contact these people?
Kalu was here. He's not here.
Well, we called him twice. Ms. Lynch mentioned it, and then I said it as well, and no one came up. So, I mean, unless we have written confirmation, I'm going to stop putting these on the agenda. This has become a habit that we schedule them and no one shows up.
And Wang Zen is 6:29.
Okay, so this one, similar to Oath, this came up during renewals. One of the beneficial interest holders and the actual manager of record actually passed away. So they informed us during renewal of the situation. And they had said that they were going to be in India. They were going to take the remains to India to lay them to rest, and then they'd be back. Okay. So we had given them until February 1st.
That was when?
So we found out during renewals in November.
Okay.
I don't know that I have the exact date.
Four months ago?
Yeah. So November 29th, basically, was when we found out. And they haven't submitted anything. I don't think that they... I asked Mr. O'Neill to put the confirmation of the receipt. It's not here. According to this, there is still one of the... So it's only... I'll tell you who passed away. Right here, we have it in the letter. So Yama Chestan was the one that passed away. They're a 25% interest holder. All the other ones, according to the renewal application, are still beneficial interest holders. So the majority is still there, and there had not been... There was no new person. So I'm not quite sure what to do on this. Maybe we do what we did with Oath, which is basically maybe send the investigator physically to go there and tell them that if it's not by Wednesday, and by Wednesday of next week, that they'll be on the 27th for an indefinite suspension of the license.
Sure.
Okay. Do we also want to issue a suspension for the violation and failure to show up? How many days? We voted for a violation, we voted for a one-day suspension, we voted that they must submit the application by Wednesday of next week, otherwise they'll be on the 27th for indefinite suspension of the license.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. And that is it, yes?
6:32.